Rob O'Reilly tonight to present the results of the new stock assessment for blue crabs, and that's a new benchmark assessment. We'll be going through that. We'll also have a discussion of a number of management measures that were advertised for consideration by the commission at next week's commission meeting. There are half a dozen measures that were proposed for consideration in there, and we'll have that discussion after the stock assessment presentation. We'll provide an opportunity for public comment during that management discussion on management options, and make every effort to take that as we go through it. And with that, I'll turn to Rob O'Reilly.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, yep. The sign-in sheet for the committee is going to be coming down the line. Please add your phone number onto the sheet. We're trying to get a good contact list for y'all in the instance we have inclement weather down the road for one of these meetings to be able to call y'all in case we had to cancel. We don't have good contact phone numbers for the whole committee.
Okay.
So we're trying to update that information.
Thank you, Joe. And Rob, before you begin, the minutes from the last meeting were distributed. Are there any changes or modifications to those minutes?
One modification, sir, on the 9th of March. It shows that I was not in attendance. I actually was here.
Okay. So noted. Any other changes? Okay. Seeing none, those will stand approved as presented and amended. Thank you. Rob?
Okay. Thank you. And the review of the new crab assessment, you've heard about this. We're lucky because Rom is here. Rom is part of the assessment team. At Jack's request, I attended the peer review process. And just to give you some background, the way things are conducted in the science world are that there's a proposal, which in this case was for an updated blue crab stock assessment bay-wide. There happened to be some funding. The disaster relief fund was utilized by the commission. $100,000 was placed towards the stock assessment. Maryland Department of Natural Resources did the same.
Yeah.
So out of the, you might remember we had $15 million from the disaster relief fund. And in turn, NOAA from the Chesapeake Bay office also funded the remainder, which was a little bit over $700,000 all told to do this assessment. It involves scientists from around the bay, from VIMS, Chesapeake Biological Laboratory, Maryland Department of Natural Resources, the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center in Maryland. I may miss somebody, but Ron can correct me. And it really was a long process. The last assessment was done in December of 2005. This one has just come out, went through the peer review. My impression of the peer review was that it was a lot different than some other peer reviews that I've been through for FinFish, because there's a lot of math involved that I really didn't know a lot about some of the math, you know, but I did know about some of the other math. But I think several hours were spent with Mike Wilberg, who's from Chesapeake Biological Laboratory, putting all the equations up on the board, you know, growth equations, instantaneous rate equations, you name it. The peer reviewers were all from different countries, and I know that the one that impressed me the most and who probably sounded the toughest to me was Catherine Dickmont, who's a South African but who's in Australia. And then there was a fellow from Great Britain, and there was one more from Chile, another fellow from Chile. I think I have that right. So they spent 2 days, I was up there for 2 days, going through the assessment. And what they really go through, an assessment has to have terms of reference. Terms of reference are what the critique is all about in terms of the reviewers. And in the case of any type of assessment nowadays, they are established and they are looked at one by one by the reviewers, to the effect that at one time, I know that Rom asked a question about an implication, a management implication. And Catherine Dickmont said, well, we will talk about that, we'll discuss that, but our charge is the terms of reference. So this document will be online soon, and when it is, you'll see the terms of references. I'm just going to go through this. Terms of reference one, critically assess and where necessary, review the life history and vital rates of blue crabs in the Chesapeake Bay. Terms of reference two, evaluate and recommend biological reference points for the Chesapeake Bay blue crab population. Well, we're going to show you some of those reference points, and you are already familiar with the reference points. It boils down to, is the stock overfished? Is overfishing occurring? Those are the reference points. Terms of reference three, describe and quantify patterns in fishery-independent surveys. What's meant by that is it's not just the dredge survey. They also look at the VIMS trawl survey, the Maryland trawl survey. There's even a Calvert Cliffs pot survey, which has been going on since 1968, a very localized survey. The fourth term was to describe and quantify patterns in catch, effort, and survey-based estimates of exploitation by sector and region. Number five is develop and implement assessment models for the blue crab fisheries, in particular models that permit estimates of the trends and status of the crab population and fisheries on a sex-specific basis should be evaluated. And this is not a brand new direction, but a successful direction. Back in the first assessment done by Lou Rugolo and others, there was information on sex-specific mortalities, but it was not to the degree that this assessment looked at, the male and female on both in terms of exploitation. Six, examine density-dependent exploitation pattern derived from survey-based and model-based approach. So what's the response with high abundance, medium abundance, low abundance? Seven, and this is important, characterize scientific uncertainty. So what about the models? What about the information? Where is the uncertainty? And that's a lot. After 2 days, I was able to leave, and the next day the peer reviewers met strictly with those on the assessment team, provided their final critiques. Also, there are comments from each reviewer. I have seen some of those. I haven't read them all. But the next step, I think, in this whole process is going to be that the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee, which has been looking at blue crab issues in terms of advisories for the jurisdiction since 1997, that meeting will take place right around the end of September for a couple of days. And they will further put the assessment information in context of the management scheme through advisories, because every year that there's not an assessment, it's the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee that updates the information and prepares an advisory. So we went 6 years, just about 5.5 years, without an assessment. And each time there is assessment, this is the third major one. There's really been four altogether. Things do change. Information does improve. The science improves. And so that's what I'll talk a little bit about tonight. But before I do that, let me just refresh a few things that you know about the survey, being the winter dredge survey that's done bay-wide. And by now, you're aware that 2010 was a very good upturn in abundance compared to the years prior, the years that I like to call the trough in abundance that occurred, you know, really from 1998 all the way through till about 2008, a little pickup in 2009, some pickup in 2005. But this trough you're going to see in several different ways, both in high removal rates and low abundance. And so I think after this occurred in the 2009-2010 survey, I really didn't find anyone who didn't think that in 2011 we'd be up here somewhere. anyone you talk to had that expectation. No matter how many times that you explain, and a lot of you do the same thing, that the environment does play a role in this whole process. Depending on the recruitment to the stock each year, that's quite a role. And the strategy over the years by the commission and by others around the bay is you try and ensure that the spawning stock, which in this case is an age one plus group of crabs that are 60 millimeters or 2.4 inches or greater, which are crabs that in the survey they will spawn the following spring or summer. That's why they're called the spawning stock. So it fell to 460 overall. Certainly the comments from last time around were, you know, not too bad compared to what we have here, and that's true. Nonetheless, as you can probably see from the next slide, it's the recruits or the age zero crabs, the smaller crabs, less than 2.4 inches, that become problematic for the fisheries as you progress through the summer into the early fall. And ROM has supplied some information on the trend of densities in 2011. And compared to 2010, where you saw a lot of hot spots up into the tributaries even of the small crabs, you see some fading of that in 2011. And certainly you would expect the bay fisheries to feel that downturn, even though, again, it's certainly better than some of these other years in the trough, but not by much. So the real issue here is, how do you possibly expect a series of years where you're going to have a good abundance of age one plus crabs and a good abundance of age zero crabs, especially when you see this? And these are color-coded towards the exploitation rate, which is percentage crabs moved over here. And what you can see, it's not that often that you get back-to-back years. You do have it here in the early 90s. You do have it here in 1996 and 97, and you do have it here in 2009, 2010, where that removal rate, which is part of the control rule and based on a biological reference point, where that rate is at or near the target. These are the trough years that I spoke about all the way through here. Not every year was overfishing. At the present time, what we talk about overfishing, we talk about 53% or greater. So there's a couple of years coded as yellow where it's above the target, but not quite at the threshold. But all these years in here are overfishing, as well as these years back here. And if you look at the situation here from 2011, you have 254 million spawning age crabs or age one plus compared to 315 million the year before. And you readily can say that, well, you know, that's not too bad compared to a lot of the years here. And you can say the same thing for the age zero crabs or the small crabs, 207, not too bad for a lot of years in here, until you see what the ultimate result is, which is the removal rate. And so it does become sort of a troubling issue. And, you know, the expectation is that maybe we can build some years sequentially that are more like 2010. But there is the environment. A little bit about your fisheries, and it's all lumped together here just as a total. And in the pounds, what you can see here, you can really see that things did change from 2008 up to 2010. In fact, when you look at the harvest in pounds, it's a 53% increase in 2 years. Most of the increase was 2008 to 2009. That was about 39%. The rest was from 2009 to 2010. The value follows the same trend. And if you don't know this, our reporting system, we probably do a better job and have better information on the pounds than we do the value. What we do for the value by necessity is we pull some buyers on a monthly basis, and we get an average value. But I think that, you know, sometime it would be nice to think that we could do a better job on getting the value information, because sometimes that's more important. For example, the disaster relief proposals that we put to the National Marine Fisheries Service, that was one of the things that they critically evaluated. Here's another bit of information about your fisheries. And if you look, you can see here for hard crabs, and these are just hard crabs and hard crab pots. So you know that the peeler crabs aren't included there. They're not a major component, but this is just the hard crabs. You can see the progression. 2004 to 2007 is shown because that's been the reference period for everything that's been done by the agency, whether it's the disaster relief proposal, whether it's the 34% reduction in female harvest that happened in 2008. It all is based on 2004 to 2007. So there has been a pretty good jump by 2010. At the same time, and we talked about this, and I know Paige had some comments, the peeler harvest has been relatively flat. It's not all about harvesters, and we did follow Paige's suggestion and look at the waiting list and really, or the buyback, pardon me, and really the number of buybacks didn't keep pace with the folks that came in who were dormant, who came into the peeler industry. So the peeler fishery's been flat. Yes, there are some hard crabs that get in the peeler pots, but this is just about peeler crabs and peeler pots. And this is a total of everything, all gears combined. So about 29.5 million pounds, very close to 30 million pounds, which is what we indicated earlier on. One thing that is a interesting part of all this process is also the different fisheries. So one thing we looked at, since part of the issue tonight will be looking at the closure of the winter dredge fishery, is to get some sense about, without making any type of extrapolation, just to look at the information together. So over here you have the survey years, and you do have the abundance of blue crab. And this is in terms of the age one plus, because that's really the size of crabs that's going to be harvested when you're talking about the winter dredge fishery. And when you look at the winter dredge harvest from Virginia, you see that there are not a lot of variations except for maybe some high points here in 2000 at 4 million pounds and some fair years here, and then it falls down. But you also have to pay attention to the harvesters. And I certainly know that there were 375 or so active dredge vessels in the past, and you could go up in the airplane and count 300 along Thimble Shoals with no problem back in the early 90s. Well, by the time you got close to 2000, the dredge fishery participation did start to decline. There is overhead involved with the fishery, but if you'll also remember, look at these years, 1999 to 2006, and I can bring it back, but what was missing was crabs were missing too. Those were the trough years. Those were the years where abundance was really low. Those were the years where there was over-exploitation, which involves the entire fishery as a whole. So one thing we wanted to look at was April, because April follows the crab dredge fishery. And really just to look at information as to what happens in the April fishery, when you look, you don't see much of a trend here, maybe a low point in 2001. We're still in the trough years throughout most of this time up until 2009. You do see almost 4 million pounds here. You do see some pickup over here, noticeably, the last 2 years, 2009, 2010, both in participation and in harvest. And, of course, you also see that the harvest overall has increased. So that's just one way to sort of look at the situation, because something you've heard before is that In 2008, in February, the commission had passed a limited entry situation for the crab dredge fishery. For those crab dredgers who had harvested during the 2005 and 2006 and 2006-2007 season, it was 53. So, of course, it would be less than even the 69 here. And then you have this information with the pot fishery about the number of harvesters involved there. So I thought it was good to bring that information back to you. Some of it is information you've seen before, some isn't. And the topic, the main topic, is the stock assessment, to talk a little bit about that. And you can read through this. This is something that Jack put together, except for the last bullet, as he was having me do some details and he was looking through the assessment. And he said, you need to show this. So these are the pluses. These are the benefits. And they're not all of them. And trust me, the document is extensive. I've been through it a couple of times. That's probably not enough. But there's a lot to take in. But I think it's very important about the sex-specific reference points, because that's the way the fisheries are. So that helps to have those. The jurisdictions are different, as you know, in terms of the sex-specific harvest that they may have. You know, we typically have been about 68 to 73% female crabs overall. And I think in the last couple of years, that's staying more in the 60s, and that would make sense if 3 years ago, about 3 years ago, there was a 34% reduction in female harvest, female crab harvest, and those measures essentially have been passed with very little modification by the commission through the 2009 and through 2010 season. Now, something's interesting here, which I will talk about in a minute, incorporates the use of MSY. One of the situations that we face is we have the Code of Virginia, and my understanding of the Code of Virginia, especially the part that deals with a lot of our fisheries items in 28.2.203, stem fairly closely to the way the Magnuson Act was, Magnuson Conservation and Management Act of 1976, which makes sense because the Commission's Fishery Management Division started in 1984. It's not as if they had time to completely invent everything. So there was some borrowing there. So we will talk a little bit about MSY, which is a big switch for this assessment compared to the 2005 assessment. This last one looks sort of subtle, but it's really not. This is something that impressed me quite a bit. The new assessment in the modeling accounts for the inefficiency of the dredge catch of age zero crabs. What does that mean? Well, that means for years, Rom, who's still here? There he is. Rom would have suction sampling in the shallow waters where the dredge couldn't go as a way to try and calibrate this estimate of age zero crabs. Of course, that takes funding. It wasn't always continuous, but Rom and Jack Von Montfrance were doing that for a number of years and had planned to even do it in recent time. What you miss is with the dredge not being able to get into the shallows, if zeros are in there more so one year than another, that causes variability. Well, the assessment and Rom, please talk about this if you need to, but it looks at that situation with inefficiency, and it, now you can scale up the age zero crabs to account for that efficiency. In a very simple way, the assessment team has come up with a way to get a better estimate of the age zero crabs. Did you want to say anything else about that, Ron? Okay. Here's all about the assessment with an S. 2005 assessment is what we've been really looking at since 2006, and 2011 brought the new assessment, and they both have control rules, and they're very different in some ways, but not so different in others. There's an overfishing limit in both. An overfishing limit is what you're used to when you hear or when you saw the information on the trawl and those red areas where the overfishing limit was breached, and the removal rate was above 53%, and that's not a good situation in any fishery.
Can you just repeat that again?
Yes, the overfishing limit is the situation where...
How many years? That's what I wanted to hear.
How many years?
You just said it, I think.
I did?
I thought you said 7 years. Is that the...
Well, I think you're probably pretty close. We can go back, but I think that's probably right from 1998 through about 2008. I think there were about 7 overfishing years. I think you're right. But we can go back in a minute if you'd like. So there's a target, 46%. With the current control rule. And in between is where you'd expect to be sometimes below, sometimes above the 46%. The overfished, if you remember the control rule that you saw before, is an area on a graph where it's 86 million crabs. And to be less than 86 million crabs was looked at to be a major problem by this control rule. The problem is with that particular overfished limit is that it's empirical. It's what has been seen by the dredge survey. It's not based on mathematics or stock assessment science. It's simply in 1998-1999, the Baywide Dredge Survey information said there were 86 million age 1 plus crabs. So that became the overfished limit. The interim target abundance, you're very familiar with that. That is something that prompted the commission to establish the waiting list criteria, that there would be 3 years where those who hadn't harvested any amount of crabs in 2004-2007 would be placed on the waiting list until such time that that interim target was met 3 consecutive years. So that's the, if you want to call it the current control rule, that's the 2005 assessment. Now the overfishing limit in the proposed rule says that 34% of all female crabs, higher than that, on a different model, MSY basis, compared to, you know, not that it's significant, but this is based on a maximum spawning potential, sort of a static model, and this is based on MSY. They're not directly comparable, but what we have seen is that they're very similar, that the points that you would see for the various years when you plot them out, the exploitation rates look very similar in terms of magnitude. What's different and is very different is it's on female crabs only. So this is all sizes of female crabs. So if the overfishing would occur if more than 34% of female crabs was removed in a year by fishing activities, whereas in the current control rule, it's males and females. Same with the target removal rate. It's on all sizes of female crabs. For the overfished limit, it's now 70 million age 1 plus female crabs. Well, at first glance, compared to 86, that certainly seems less. So it seems as if this stock assessment isn't as conservative as that. But again, this is just female crabs. So if you were to make the translation of what this would be equivalent to in male and female crabs, now you're looking at about 135 million. So if you imagine 86 million is where my hand is, move that up to 135 million, you will be overfished earlier than you will with the 86. So that's the way that was established by the assessment. The target abundance is something that was not without a lot of emphasis from the jurisdictions. The jurisdictions through CBSAC established this interim target. There had to be some way back in 2008 when things were not doing very well anywhere, when the governors got involved from the jurisdictions to promote the 34% reduction in female crabs, CBSAC met and looked at a interim target. This interim target was chosen back in January of 2008 because it seemed to be associated with at least good recruitment, good production of new crabs. It also seemed to be associated with a harvest level. It was somewhere in the 60 to 70,000 pound range, which we've seen bay-wide in 2010 when the harvest was about 89 million pounds. So the target abundance has switched, not by much, 200 to 215, until again you realize it's just female crabs. And if that were to be the way the assessment is designed with a 52% female, 48% male sex composition, which is what is found in the recruits or the small crabs, if that were done for the one plus female crabs, this would be 415 million male and females. So it's about double. And here's where it gets a little bit tricky. When you look at the information from the winter dredge survey, you have to go back to 2003 to find an even split, male-female, roughly, in the age one plus. In the latter years, when you look at what comes out of the survey, the results, it's about 75% female. So in fact, this might be an easier situation given that, but at the same time, I think the number of years where it's been 50-50 or close to it, 52-48 on female to male, is certainly a better stock situation. So 215 age one plus female crabs is the target. The jurisdictions asked that that be a part of what the assessment team looked at specifically, and that was looked at. So that leads quite nicely to this next slide. And what this slide shows is it's in two halves, unfortunately, but here's by year of the dredge survey. So 1990 means the 1989-1990 through March survey, and 2011 means 2010 December through 2011 March. What's highlighted in yellow are the two surveys that produced more than 215 million female crabs. And 2010 was one of those surveys. So 1991 was the other. And if you remember the way the abundance looked, there was even more abundance back in the early 90s. So is it a reachable target? Yes, it's a reachable target. Is it a difficult target? It's still a difficult target. I mean, all you have to do is go back through time and see that there are probably just a few occasions where it's even come close to the 250.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead, Pete. And why don't we we're going to take this and then we'll go through it.
Yeah. The fishery over the whole time has been characterized by spikes, peaks, and valleys. How are we going to account for that in harvest amounts when you've only got 2 years of where we could potentially reach this goal? You know, you don't have to answer that. I'm just throwing that out there. I don't even expect an answer.
Well, no, there's, you know, you can give as good an answer as I can, obviously. But it leads me to another thing to mention to you. I just sort of quietly said that we can reach that type of harvest, that 60 to 70 million pound harvest that's associated with, you know, having the interim target of 200 million males and females. We not only reached it, we surpassed it in 2010 bay-wide.
The question is, were all the planets in alignment that caused that? Because we've seen this when we didn't have any of the problems we have now, we still saw this over years and years and years. How do we control that when we've got harvest restricted down to a limit that should accomplish
control the harvest? The fishing mortality.
Well, how do you control abundance by harvest alone when the whole thing has always been like this? Well, you know, if you go back in years past before the numbers you showed us, pre-1991, it still goes up and down and up and down and up and down.
Well,
don't answer it.
I want to answer something else, though, which is, you know, the 90 million, one of the dilemmas in 2011 is that we had a 30% drop in abundance. So there's part of the seesaw. So that 30% drop in abundance, what we showed the commission last month, everything being equal, if we maintained that harvest in 2011 and there wasn't compensation, if the fishery was able to, you know, take care of all the patches of crabs and still have a high harvest like 2010, we're overfishing. We would be overfishing. The exploitation rate or the removal rate would be about 57%. So, you know, keep thinking about that question, because we certainly do too, and we're thinking about for 2011. And one of the slides that I showed earlier, if I'm clever enough to go back here, and I kind of doubt it, I usually aren't able to do this, but let's see.
Mr. Chairman, let me just, you know, if I might.
Yeah, but I tell you, we've got a lot of ground to cover, so why don't we go on through the rest of the presentation, because I just wonder if we're
trying to put up an unattainable goal. And I'm wondering if that's
the only thing
by design.
Is the assessment indicates that when it talks about the 215 female crabs and it talks about the 415 sexes combined, the statement is similar to back in the 80s, in the 1980s. That's what's in the assessment. But if I can follow through, since you gave me the opportunity to sort of lead to one of them, you know, everything comes down to harvest, abundance, and exploitation rate. That's all this comes down to.
Rob, and excuse me. Jack had a quick comment. Let me let him speak on that, and then we'll go on.
Okay. About whether or not we're setting an unattainable goal. I think a lot of people have read the article in the paper. They call me and said, the new assessment sets the target so high, it won't be achieved in my life. And I try to explain that's not true at all. I don't think they're as high as people think they are. In fact, we hit the new target. So it's definitely possible to get there. And I think if we hadn't had the winter mortality that we had last winter, these are very close to the new target for our second year.
70s and 80s.
I think it's definitely attainable. Now, in terms of your first comment, you know, with all the ups and downs with the weather and everything else, you know, typically with fishery management, when we have those kinds of things going on, means you have to be more conservative than what you said, so that you don't have the population crash because of those kinds of things. In other words, you don't want to fish it so hard that you don't leave anything left in case you have a bad weather day. You know, but I think where we are now, we've sort of reached that position with what we've done over the last 3 years. We allow for a bad weather period last year.
Well, what makes me think about this is a conversation I had with Vince Guillory a while back. And for the record, he's the crabologist for Louisiana. And he said to me, he said, I don't see how you have any crabs up there. He says, because you have such a narrow opening at the mouth of the bay for the potential of the larvae to get back in the bay. He says, down here in the Gulf, all they have to do is just come ashore. whereas they have to make it in the narrow mouth of the bay? Are they going to go to Carolina? Are they going to go to Delaware? Or, you know, are they just going to go up against the shore and never get in a reproductive area? And that's probably why we have this, more than any other reason.
Ron, to that point?
This is actually a point of clarification to make sure everybody's on the same page. There's a big difference between the threshold and the target. Threshold is something you don't want to exceed in terms of exploitation rate, or you don't want to go below it in terms of abundance. Target is not like that. Target, we expect to be bouncing around it, above and below. So seeing what you had before, 250 million one year, 194, 95 million the other, that's actually to be expected, accounting for differences in the environment and so on. So there's no reason to press automatically jump to more severe regulation of it because we reach 194. We actually expect to come back up and sort of be moving around that.
Rob.
Okay. Since I didn't mention it before and went through it quickly, and it's a good time to bring it up again, please look at 2011. Look at the type of March, million pounds. Look at the type of April. Maybe there's a little bit of delinquent data right out there still, which is 4.2 million pounds, a little less than 2010. But probably not when all the data are in. Joe, Grist, and I looked at May, which is partial. We took the same number of harvesters that were available in 2010, did a ratio multiplier of that, and May looks like it's going to be pretty solid too, 4 million. Now, that's not good news, because you just heard me say that bay-wide, somehow, we need a 25% reduction to stay under the threshold, because the threshold not only works with abundance, it works with the exploitation rate. So, you know, that's something to think about, whether those small crabs that were less prevalent in 2011, whether that will help calm down the harvest. The only warming sensation we have so far is from Lynn Fegley, when Jack asked her this question earlier in the year, and she said, well, it just so happens that in 8 out of 9 years where the abundance has dropped, the harvest has followed suit. But that's about all we have as far as any kind of evidence. So with the stock assessment and the control rule, as Jack had indicated, and Ron makes a nice point here, the 194 is not too far from 215. You know, the 165 is a little bit lower, 166, and certainly these years were low. So, you know, it's not a magical situation. Really doesn't have to do with anything more than looking for an increase in abundance compared to a lot of these very poor years. Not going to go through all this, but this is what the assessment is really promoting. It's promoting MSY, as I mentioned. This U is the exploitation rate or removal rate. 34% or 0.34 is the threshold. Then there's a situation where, because it's considered a data-poor species, they're following a convention that's followed in the council and treating the 0.75 or 3/4 of the threshold is the target, and that ends up being 0.255. Now, that's at least the 3/4 is conventional. The current, what we've been living by, the 0.53 and the 0.46, if you were to take 75% of 0.53, our target should have been 0.39, not 0.43. So this is at least keeping with convention. The overfished abundance threshold is half N for abundance, so it's half of the abundance at MSY. And that is also very conventional in terms of MSY and in terms of setting an overfished threshold. And I think that the 70 million you saw before is the age one plus female crabs. Some fisheries, especially fin fisheries, instead of having an abundance threshold, might have a biomass threshold. But in any case, the thresholds are usually geared to be a proxy for spawning stock biomass. And in the terms of the crab assessment, age one plus female crabs are the spawning stock. The last point is the target, and it's 75% here of the exploitation rate, and they have a target abundance of 215 million age one plus crab. Here's that statement. This is a level of abundance that was observed in the population in the mid-1980s. And here's what I told you about earlier. The target is equivalent to 415 million sexes combined, males and females. So I think something that we've heard here, FMAC, everywhere else, is about the Code of Virginia in 28.2203. And I think in 28.203 it might be 0.4, but it talks about optimum yield. Of course, the way it talks about optimum yield in the code is that you don't go after optimum yield if you're overfishing or if you have an overfished condition. It's not intended that way. Now, you know that we've had a control rule to try and prevent overfishing and an overfished condition since 2006. So if you think about it, the control rule by itself forms the guidelines for the management. So compared to maximum sustainable yield, that's the largest average catcher yield that can be taken from a stock. And you see for optimum yield that that information for maximum sustainable yield is necessary for optimum yield. The most optimum yield can be is maximum sustainable yield. If you don't have any other economic, social, or ecological factors or control rules or anything else, then you know you go right to MSY. You see the assessment does that mostly except because it's the data for species in the terms of the overall overfished area, it sets it at 0.75. So it's based on MSY as the optimum yield. It's if you imagined a curve, a parabola, right in the center height of the parabola would be MSY. Because if you imagined a graph where you had stock abundance on the x-axis and let's say you had the yield on the y-axis, in the middle of that parabola would be the highest point, would be the maximum sustainable yield. So this should be welcome news to all those who have been very concerned and have posed a lot of good questions about why isn't the commission promoting optimum yield? Well, I think now with this new assessment, this isn't what I just described to you verbally. This is actually looking at growth of the stock and the intrinsic rate of growth and carrying capacity. But nonetheless, the points there that I just mentioned, you'd have MSY here, which is half of, you know, the carrying capacity, one half of the carrying capacity of stock. The way the assessment looked at that, they're looking at it in terms of one half as the overfished area. So it's a little bit different, but the point is still the same. If you wanted to know where optimum yield is, it's going to change depending on social, economic, ecological considerations. But in most cases, it's going to be less than MSY. Well, got a server problem. I can probably describe the next slide, but let's see if we can close out or do something. pardon my reverting to the old-fashioned way there. Doing pretty good on this, by the way. If you would have seen me last year, it was really pathetic. So, you know, a little bit of credit. So, you know, that's maximum sustainable yield. I'm going to do the same thing here. I apologize for the machine, not for anything else, but I guess I'll have to close this out and see if I can boot it back up again. So let's do this. You can see that. Last time I had power problems like this, there were three people on the front row all telling me different things. So I just said, okay. Okay, so relating to MSY, you have something similar to Optimum Yield, but in terms of economics, the economic yield. And, you know, economics is really determining how much yield you're taking out. And like Optimum Sustainable Yield or Optimum Yield, it's going to be less than MSY. So there are considerations why you can't just be taking out the maximum sustainable yields. There are contingencies, and those contingencies are of various different factors. And so that's pretty much it on that situation, unless there's some questions about the assessment. Again, I suspect we can have this online at some point, maybe Jack will occur. Assessment
document. Oh, yeah, it's online.
You can go right to the Norchester Bay.
Oh, I was shaking heads, so once again, I'm in the dark. Thanks a lot.
Norchester Bay office.
That's true. That's right.
And it'll take care of it.
Includes all the review documents.
Yeah.
The review comments are pretty good.
Rob, you said that the CBSAC, the Stock Assessment Committee, is scheduled to meet in late September, and they would be issuing a management advisory. Can you give us some sense of what we might anticipate? Would they? I assume they'd be relating the output of the new assessment to the current management regimes in Maryland and Virginia. But would you anticipate anything specific other than what we know relative to the new reference points?
Well, I mean, there are different sections of the advisory, and I don't know how NOAA is going to do this particular one. Ron is also on the technical committee, and one thing that you can be certain of, there'll be advice, management advice, that says keep regulations static. You know, that's one thing I would expect. You know, beyond that, I think with the new assessment, it won't be the typical advisory. The other thing I would expect is that CBSAC, you know, we're talking about females since, female crabs, since 2008. And that's become, you know, really the necessity when we tried to make baywide reductions in 2008. The choices were a 34% reduction or in females, or try and get a 17% reduction everywhere. And since it's the female spawning component that's so important, the choice was pretty obvious. It was a 34% reduction in females. However, there are indications, and I spoke about it earlier, you have to go to 2003 before you see roughly a 50-50 sex composition out of the winter dredge survey. In most of the last three or four years, it's been 75% female. The exploitation rates on males and the target on males needs to be developed. There was a phone call about a month, even before the peer review, that involved the goal implementation team. The goal implementation team is NOAA, VMRC, Maryland DNR, NGOs. It's really looking at things for implementation for the bay. Blue crab is one of the species. Blue catfish is another one that they've looked at the GIT. Oysters. So it's a bay-driven process. And there was a conference call, and one of the things that Jack brought up, actually we both brought up, was the assessment doesn't have anything specifically about exploitation rates for males and targets for males. And Tom Miller, who was the lead of the assessment, indicated that, you know, that he acknowledged that and that that needs to be done. So one of the things CBSAC will do, not so much management advice, but will discuss how that is to develop, to have those as well, because given the importance of female crabs, at the same time, you want to make sure that the exploitation rates for males and the targets for males are there as well. And out of that, there will probably develop, in talking to Lynn Fegley, some type of decision rules that the GIT may or may not like. They didn't like them before, but the stock condition was different then. Decision rules are such things as if you're below the threshold, if you're below the target, if you're above the overfish limit, if your composition of crabs is such, if your harvest is such, then this action can happen or this action can happen. So that's what I know now. I mean, I don't know more than that.
But, Rob, is the staff going to have a link to that goal implementation team that would be involved in the discussion of any protocols?
Yeah. Okay. Jack and okay. I are both on.
Thank you. I know you're going to have questions about the assessment, so why don't we go ahead and take those? Ken?
I've got a list up. Can you bring that that chart back up that was in kind of color and it went to the overfished rate? It was in the beginning of the...
red, green, and yellow one?
Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah, right there. I just wanted to see how many years it was 53 over, what was it?
11 years since 1990.
Oh. I just wanted to know that because I'm going to go back and look at it. I think when we were doing these things last time that it wasn't that big. We were given different sets of figures. But going back to what Pete said about the spike years, Lee Ann Washington made a presentation in front of the commission that was not received very well. And she made the comment in there, and it showed, the numbers showed that the years were actually overfished. I mean, it was over half of these years that were overfished. It was actually an abundance of crabs the following year. So, I mean, I'm just following what Pete said about this spike, that it's kind of hard to determine. And I guess the other big thing when we're talking about the maximum sustainable yield, that's the thing up there said under existing environmental conditions. I mean, daggone, the bay isn't getting any better. You know, so, I mean, is this going to continually change here again on that fact? And also, the blue crab plan code says that the blue crab plan is supposed to be coming in with, that VMRC is supposed to be making recommendations about these environmental conditions and what could be done, even if it means introducing new legislation. And I know this thing with optimal yield is going to come up here that, I mean, we've been talking about that, but it seems to me that optimal yield was redefined here, and it's not defined as how it is in code.
Didn't hear a single question, but...
But I'm just observations that
right.
I see in this.
The only thing I'd like to respond to, though, is what you said right here. I think what you have to do is, I don't know about whether there have been any changes. I can't imagine that, because this... chart just keeps keeping getting added to and added to, but pick your best abundance. Go to green. Do you want total abundance, which is high in all the green years? Do you want zeros? Green years look fairly high for the zeros or the recruits, the small crabs, or do you want spawners? And what is the interrelationship between that? Because one of the things that we looked at initially, after this interim target, we thought, and there were dialogues, that there should be some, that the final target should somehow blend the age zero and the age one plus. You can try to look for that not you personally, but I mean you universally can look for that type of situation, and if you look at all the information, it looked to us like the years you get about 500 million or close to it are have been really good years. Well, the assessment team did better than that. They didn't take that as a recommendation. The people at least who were involved with it, and they came up with the 215 million female target, or 415 male and female. But I mean, that's the only thought I'd have on that, Ken.
Jack?
Just in response to Ken's reminder that the management plan should make recommendations about environmental issues, if this committee, this is an advisory committee, if this committee has things on the mind about environmental issues that the commission needs to address or make recommendations to the General Assembly, then let us know.
Yeah.
Tell us what's on your mind.
Jack? Jack, when is that report prepared, and how could this committee?
December.
Okay, so if this committee were to offer input, say in October or November, would that be timely?
Well, let's do it before November.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jack. And I think what we did, which is not a good way to get the information, but when the disaster relief plan was turned into National Marine Fisheries Service, we were able to get a lot of information about habitat and the environment that we currently didn't have at hand. VIMS is a big provider, although I will say if you look at the plan, it's not a solution basis, it's problems. Here are more problems, and here are more problems, whether it relates to anoxia or hypoxia, SAV, whatever it may be. So it would take some thought to get a recommendation. And that plan's online as well. You can get through our website to get the plan that goes to the governor and the General Assembly. So I think that's a great idea.
Ron.
A concrete recommendation that could come from this, having been involved in some of this, would be for this committee to be in support of the EPA guidelines on water quality. That's a big fight. Most of you probably are aware of that. And there's been no support from industry or the watermen's associations. This is an opportunity maybe for this group that is putting on support.
The Watermen's Association was the one that started the lawsuit, so I mean, we certainly had.
So, with CBF and some of all, that might be one way to put a letter forth to the governor to be in support of the EPA guidelines. Just a suggestion.
Thanks, Ram. Other questions of the assessment?
I got a question.
Yep, Tosh.
You said the first or the last assessment was in 05, and what money was used to pay for that?
In December of 05, that went through NOAA, strictly, if I remember correctly. NOAA, Chesapeake Bay office of NOAA, and NOAA was the major funder of this assessment as well, about 500,000 of the total.
Okay, so Virginia and Maryland decided to take $100,000 a piece of federal disaster money that was designated for the crabbers to go do this assessment?
I think this was for the benefit of crabbers, yes. And I think Jack would say the same thing.
$150.
Thanks, Jack. Yeah.
For the benefit of the crabbers.
Other questions, Johnny?
I just got one chart. The chart with the dockside value in pounds.
I'm afraid you're going to make me go back with this thing, so we'll see how we do.
I haven't seen this dock assessment. This is the first time.
Really?
I've been studying the numbers.
Okay.
I think for the first time in 20 years, you're going to see the poundage match the dollar value.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to glean information as to why that's happened.
Now, I've got to go. You want to see this?
You did.
Yep.
Just a little below.
Yeah, there's a coupling, isn't there, in the last couple of years.
What's the interpretation there? What's happened? In your mind?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is what I said earlier. I wish we had better value data, I mean, frankly. And maybe we have better data here, but you're getting close to, I would guess, 90-some cents a pound, and you're getting more of the pot fishery. The pot fishery is probably 90-92% of the harvest.
My interpretation of that is, knowing how many crabs I buy and what I'm paying for them in those last 3 years where it's going up in value, is contradictory to what I'm paying. That tells me there's a shift in effort. That tells me the crabbers are going after males and making more money. And we're talking about females, putting females back in. So that's my point.
Okay. Makes all the more reason why what we talk about is what we're going to talk about at CBSAC. That, you know, what's good for the female crab in terms of monitoring exploitation is good for the male crab.
Rob, can we follow up on that question at the next meeting?
Sure.
And just look at the change in sexual composition of harvest during that time period, if that information is available.
For us?
Yes.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. Thanks. Ron?
Just to go on with what Connie said is that the abundance of females increased over the last 3 years, but the abundance of males was basically coming flat, so it's consistent with what John is saying. The exploitation rates are the same.
Thanks. Ken?
Oh, just a quick question. I mean, we're always working on this year, next year. Is there a long-term goal where we want to see this fishery? I mean, is it a...
15, average 215 million pounds.
I mean, I know we're talking about this 250, but, I mean, do we see where this is going to be 20 years from now?
Ken, I think that's the question we ought to be asking as a committee, frankly. These are biological reference points.
Yeah, I mean, right? I'm just wondering, have we ever gone to sit there and say, where do we want this fishery to be 20 years from now?
You just hit the nail on the head. That's what this committee needs to talk about, is what do we want this fishery to look like?
And we've talked a little bit about the need to engage the industry to have that longer-term type conversation about the structure of the fishery, you know, what exactly the goals and objectives are in terms of what you want the fishery to look like, how you want it to perform. Because we end up, you know, we end up every year in regulatory discussions that tend to be focused on immediate modifications for regulatory.
This is why I asked that in 94, 98, whatever, we told it was going to be a sustainable fishery. All we had to do was obey the regulations. It was going to happen. The watermen obeyed the regulations. 208, everything changes again. We're told if we obey these regulations and it's an increase in crabs, we're going to get things back. We obeyed it. We went by the regulations. And now all of a sudden here it is 2011, and we're going to change everything again. I mean, somehow or another that the waterman has sat here and all they've done is obey the regulations that have been put on them. And yet... it's constantly changing. Well, you know, the thing is that if we go back and we look at 208, we were told if this happens, you're going to be getting back. And now it talks about if we get back, we're going to have to give up something else to get that back. I throw my hands up. I'm just...
Before you do that, it should be recognized that we are part of modernization of the science. And that, if you look back at some of the reports, no one knew overfishing was occurring until about 2006. I mean, they really didn't know overfishing was occurring. The commission did put regulations in place in 94, 96, 2000, 2001, 2002, all with very good intentions. There was a regulatory review committee, You can talk forever about it, but I won't.
I'll go ahead. I'll give you the argument of overfishing. I'll give you that and say, okay, we've overfished it. But the reason it's been overfished is because under existing environmental conditions. That's the reason it gets overfished, because this existing environmental conditions keeps changing. And
another reason is what Pete brought up, and maybe I'll get a chance to finally answer him in a few minutes on his spikes. So if you want me to go forward, I'll go forward.
I'd like to say, too, that our understanding of the stock has changed, I think, pretty significantly over the last decade. Ten years ago, the commission didn't have the understanding of the population dynamics that it does today, and we didn't have the understanding that we did in 2006 when we got the 2005 benchmark assessment. This represents, I think, a significant step in terms of having a better understanding of population dynamics as far as assessment quality goes. This is a much more significant assessment than what we had in 2005. I think the good news in it, frankly, from where I sit, is the fact that the new exploitation target relative to where we were over the last couple of years is actually pretty much in line with where we've been. I can appreciate the concern about the new population targets, but as far as the exploitation rates, which is what we have to be concerned about on an annual basis in terms of how we're managing the fishery, is pretty much in line with where we were the last couple of years. Now, Rob's already identified there is some concern about catch this year and how that might relate to the latest measure of abundance, but I think, you know, it's not fair to say that the commission 15 years ago had a full understanding of the implications of the management measures that were in place then relative to the population dynamics. I mean, the environmental conditions may have changed, but our understanding of the stock has improved quite a bit, too. So, go ahead.
I guess if you look at this agenda item, it's a little bit wide open. Management discussion, status quo versus other changes. So status quo has been pretty much that since 2008. The plan the commission put in effect has been modified a little by first having a May 1 closure to the sanctuary, and then last year putting that to May 16th when it closes. The idea of conservation neutrality has existed for 3 years, as far as I can tell, as far as anyone else can tell on staff, and some of the mitigation for any changes was the things that weren't counted on. And I know it's brought up quite a bit on the sponge crab regulation, which has been changed to now you can keep dark colored sponges starting July 1, but nonetheless, that's not part of the plan that started in 2008. The other thing was the reduction in licenses, where initially it was going to be a 30% decrease for both peeler and the crab pot. It's now 15 for crab pot and 30 for the peeler crab. So the season was changed. Originally, we went from October 26th through the end of November in 2008. That is a long time. And that was modified so that the last couple years, it's been a 10-day closure to the harvest of females only, the 21st to 30th. So coming up for the public hearing, it involves a lot of those issues. One is proposed closure of winter dredge fishery. It's already been closed for three seasons. The last winter dredge fishery was in the spring of 2008. And as I mentioned earlier, at that time, the closure preempted what had been established by the commission in February of 2008 as a limited fishery for 53 individuals. The other thing to look at is the waiting list, which you've seen information on before. Staff has gone forward and taken the recommendations. There weren't a whole lot of recommendations, but one of the recommendations, and you'll see it briefly, was to look at maybe a designated full-time fisherman, that a full-time fisherman who did whatever that category might be or that characterization might be, 100 days or more on the water. Perhaps that's one good evaluation. But all on the waiting list had no harvest of crabs for 4 years. And when you look at the waiting list, there were 867 individuals on the waiting list in November of 2008. Most of the individuals that were granted entry were able to get a license were through the commission process through appeals that lasted from January to June of 2008. So one thing to think about, and we heard you loud and clear about the waiting list earlier in the year, but a waiting list individual could have been part of the buyback program. There were some. A waiting list individual could have transferred back in the fishery. Some have. A waiting list individual could have appealed to the commission. A lot did. To the point where that original 867 is now 320, 190 crab potters, and 130 former peeler potters. And I'll have some information on that. But when we talk about this, we talk about all the ways that the waiting list has had opportunities. And you know the 200 million interim target, with the real emphasis on interim, has been reached 3 years in a row. The other item is the Blue Crab Sanctuary, which is really a housekeeping detail. We haven't had coordinates on physical landmarks on the sanctuary since June of 2010, because law enforcement initially and then our engineering and surveying department found that the coordinates weren't matching up with the structures, and there was no pattern. Some were off a little bit to the east, to the west. That meant that our engineering and surveying department had to go out and take GPS and resurvey every light, every type of marker, any buoy, anything that was on the sanctuary line. At the same time, Rom and his staff looked at the existing, what I'll call points on the water, points that helped form the boundary, and made sure they were in keeping with the points we provided them for the structure. So we'll be bringing that to the commission. Coordinates will be established. It will benefit some fishermen. Some fishermen do key off certain points of the sanctuary with their GPS, and that also will be on our website as soon as it's finalized. The item on Maryland identification numbers also is a housekeeping issue for the commission, but make you aware of it since Jack brought it up to you, I think last fall. And what this is back in 2008, during all the many measures the commission was facing, they got one to allow Potomac River fishermen, Fisheries Commission, and North Carolinians who also fished in Virginia, that while their pots were in Virginia, their buoys or their stakes could have the North Carolina or the PRFC marking. For some reason, and I'm not sure why, Maryland did not come forward timely enough. And in any way, when the commission passed that regulation, they deferred it to the following March anyway, so maybe that was the confusion for Maryland. There have been some problems recently. It's difficult to tell how severe they were, but law enforcement indicates they think one citation was written and some other warnings perhaps about this situation with Marylanders in Virginia waters with IDs that, according to the regulation, they're not allowed to be doing that legally in Virginia. So we'd like to fix that. Revised requirements of crab culling. I should mention that, if you probably don't know this, and I realize you haven't met for several months, but these three items here aren't coming directly through fisheries management. These three items are coming through the agency's regulatory review committee. This is something the commissioner wanted to form to have a bridge of communication among everyone in the agency, but especially with fisheries and law enforcement, just because over the years there have been a lot of regulations, and it's important that law enforcement can take the intent and also have the enforceability of that regulation. So this committee consists of both habitat, fisheries management, law enforcement representatives, It's chaired by John Bull, who's here tonight. And I think we've had about three meetings. I'm on the committee. And so these three items are really hashed out away from fisheries management directly. The second one is requirements of crab culling. I know I talked to Pete about this. The idea here is there is a conservation situation. If you want to take it at its smallest value, there's conservation that could be enabled through better culling. What we found out is some harvesters cull at the pot. Some harvesters cull after a tote or two or whatever. Some harvesters might cull in between going from one area to another, in between strings of pots. It's a little bit varied. The idea is that it really is something that there has been no enforceability, because the way that regulation reads is the catcher must cull at the location. Now, we're not sure. No one's sure really what that means, at the location, at what location. So the language that the Regulatory Review Committee developed was keeping it, you have to cull at the location, but also it shall be unlawful not to cull crabs at the time you have three totes of crabs. And we're asking you for several things about that tonight. It's not a major issue for you, but you're the experts. We need to hear from you on two items. One, is that something that's going to be crippling to you? Because law enforcement varied from saying it should be after one tote, it should be after two tote. The Regulatory Review Committee said three totes would do it, would serve its purpose. Law enforcement has also mentioned that there might be a bit of a hedge with the culling, in that you can, bury sublegal crabs. You can make it safely out of the sight of law enforcement, those type of situations. The other thing is that might be an issue is in June, if it's hot enough, if you have sponge crabs and you know you have to cull those, but you're not going to cull them right away, maybe that's a problem that if the egg mass doesn't survive, maybe the crab would survive with better culling. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Questions for you.
Mr. Chairman.
Marshall.
Question. Define the tote.
Well, that's the second thing I was going to ask you about. If I'm lucky, I included that. Let me go to the end. Let's see. Marshall, I hope it's here, but you never know. A tote, the way it's defined now, is right here.
I talked to Jack about that the other day, about defining the dimension.
So, this is information we received from a crabber. I heard that this is pretty universal. I don't know if that's the case at all, quite frankly.
I crab pot for 31 years. I ain't never used one of them.
Okay. Well, so it's not universal. It's not universal. So we established that. Now, what we're trying to establish, and for the commission, we directly said CMAQ will help us out, is to what the container should be. So in a regulation, you have the ability to make a definition.
Container.
We're defining a container. Right now, the way that container reads, it takes these internal dimensions in a volumetric measure, and it adds 10%. To the size, the inside cubic volume of this container.
Where can you get those from?
That's, well, apparently from various, John might pitch in, various suppliers, but,
that's
this
a
one,
fish tote.
That's
not a crab
tote.
That's a fish tote.
That's what it says. That's what
you're going to put crabs in a fish tank.
I'm not. I'm not. This is what I was sent. This is why we're here, to establish what you need in terms of maybe a volumetric measure. I'm not a crabber, in case
we,
you
we
haven't.
We use wash tubs and baskets. That's what we use over home. We got a wash tub. You know what a wash tub is. Grandma used wash clothes in it. That's what we use, and baskets. We don't use no such thing as that for crabbing. Maybe on the Western Shore, but not home.
Well, this was sent to us by a former crabber, so I don't know. We'll have to figure that
That's
one out.
That's why he's
former
crabber.
He was a fisherman using that crabber. No, we'll fix that, though. That won't work.
No, no. This is if you look at the regulation and the evaluation right now, we clearly said we are coming to CMAQ to figure this one out. First question is, can you support this idea of culling, which right now it's sort of wide open? It's up to the Marine police officer to say, wait a minute, you're not culling at the location, and then there can be a debate of what the location is. So do you support conservation through culling in a manner such as every three containers, whatever those containers might look at, is a good thing? That's question one. Question two is help us with the container.
Rob, is this primarily reflecting an enforcement concern that's been expressed to the committee or through the committee?
I think that's a 70%. The 30% is also just the conservation ethic, period. And even the sponge crabs were brought up.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Pete.
Does anybody have the wording of the current regulation? I know we worked on this for months, about 15 years ago.
It just says the catcher shall cull his catch at the location, something to that effect. That's it.
Well, if that's the case, what ended up in code or in regulation is not what we came up with a number of years ago through this committee, and the commission, I thought, adopted. If you want to go back and look through, I don't know, it's been quite a while back. You don't remember it?
I didn't either.
You don't remember? Tommy, do you remember it?
Yeah, it's been 10, 12 years.
Yeah, we had videos of guys on boats calling out of tin garbage cans. You know, everybody had a different method. And what we ended up with, and I thought the wording was that you had to call into a container that was different than what you were selling your crabs in. If you were selling in barrels, you couldn't call in a barrel. If you were selling in baskets, you couldn't call in a basket. And you could have three of those containers. Now, the conversation also went along the lines of, well, could you have three containers that were as big as a whole skiff? And no, but I forget exactly what the verbiage was that we came up with. And the intent was that you would be, to some extent, culling your catch throughout the day, but you didn't have to stop and do it at every pot. For some people, that works fine. But for others, it doesn't.
I think the best thing, listening to this, the best thing is to sort of get this in place for March of next year and to let the commission know that the committee tonight, at least, has other issues. But this is important, but, I mean, we are already in August. So if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, staff would like to bring this back, and it would be good if we could get some feel for the type of containers, frankly. In the meantime, you know, if you can...
Could I add one more thing?
Yeah.
The conversation at that time was a law enforcement issue also, because there were some folks in Guinea in particular that were coming in where they were just dumping all their crabs in the bottom of the boat and then culling at the dock. And, of course, they wanted to slip off with whatever they could. And the other part of the recommendation for regulation was that you would have to be culled out before you got to your point of landing. And you could not have any more than three containers of unculled crabs that were of different description than what you were marketing your product in.
One of the solutions is, we don't want to force everybody to go buy a fish tank. If you just convert that to a volumetric measurement and say you can use three containers as long as they don't exceed this volume. And I don't care if you're using wash tubs or fish tubs.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Baskets.
Yeah, well, I think what we had come up with at that time, that it would amount to no more than about six baskets. And I think Warner Rose participated in this a lot. Am I correct, Tommy? Wasn't he working up in Guinea at that time?
But Rob, I think your suggestion is probably fine. Obviously, this is not right. Something that has to be right. Done tonight. But the concept's out, the discussion's out now, and it sounds like the principle is actually very similar to what was discussed 10 or 12 years ago by the committee. So Why don't we refine that in committee jointly with staff?
That was one of our,
right. That's fine.
Our thoughts that it might happen.
So next time we come back, maybe let's have some examples of containers and measurements, et cetera, that staff can.
So this is really just to let the committee know about the items coming before the commission. You know, the suggestion by Jack is good, and then we could, you know, add 10%. Once we get sort of the average type of container, we can go from there. The last item is new in that it's proposed new requirements for tending crab pots and peeler pots. And what that is all about is gill nets, for example, have to be tended. And if a Marine police officer sees an untended net, he'll notify the licensee. The licensee has 24 hours to remove the net. If such net is not removed, the officer can remove the net, confiscate the net. With what we talked about for the crab pot, again, it tends back to conservation on our thinking. There is law enforcement situations. There are several aspects about this that make it palatable. One is we're recommending 5-day period. So if you see that pots aren't fished over a 5-day period, enforcement's on the water, they can tell that. They notify the licensee. The licensee then has 24 hours to remove the pots. The first thing that comes up is, well, he might be ill, or she might be ill, or you know, they may not be there. Whatever the case may be, then there would have to be some ability to get authorization for someone else to get those pots up. That's contemplated. The other thing is that it's known that pots serve as a deterrent to certain fishing activities. So, for example, we, not perennially, but every few years, we have real problems with crab pot hull seine conflicts. And there have been crab pots that are set strictly to prevent a hull. This may help with that situation. I mean, because sometimes those situations can get, pretty bad. The other thing is VIMS, through Dr. Kirk Havens, in working with the Marine Debris Collection Program, has certainly sent information that indicates what they find in these pots, ghost pots. And what we're understanding, I've also talked to Pete recently, is that at the end of the season, there are individuals who just leave their pots. That's it. They're out there. Can't imagine it, about 30-some bucks a pot that happens, but apparently it does happen. So we're looking at this as a conservation issue primarily. Enforcement certainly would like to help out on this, and we'd like your thoughts on this, maybe some recommendation. I know that when I talked to Pete, he thought that maybe 7 days might be better than five, but that, you know, overall, this could help out. So just looking for recommendations on that. And it can be an hour later. That's fine.
I think this will be relatively simple. If the committee agrees, why don't we go ahead and take this one? It sounds relatively straightforward, but are there specific concerns about the number of days? Pete, do you still have that concern?
Yeah, you know, all you have to do is get the flu or something, or in some sort of internal distress, and you might be out 2 or 3 days just trying to recover. And if it ends up being on a Thursday or something, and you end up losing the ability to do anything on Sunday, you know, you might be 5 days and not really causing a problem. Other than sponge crabs in the really hottest time of the year, most crabs will survive 5 days. You might lose 2 or 3 in a pot unless you're in an anoxic water situation. So I would think a couple more days wouldn't hurt as far as conservation went.
Rob, is there an escape valve in there, or an exemption for medical situations? Or can we add that?
I think the commission probably is what we'll say is the same type of thing we said here, but we realize there are contingencies, and with the commissioner or his designee to authorize someone else to take care of that type of situation, that'd be fine. We also talked about the 7 days. I think what it comes down to is South Carolina has 5 days. New Jersey has 72 hours. North Carolina, I think, is in that line too, but North Carolina said they do not see enforcing, you know, enforcement action on that. You know, we don't want that. I mean, if we establish something, especially through the route we are, mm-hmm. and 7 days seems better than five to the committee, but that they can realize that there is a conservation benefit, then I, you know, we already talked about 7 days as well at the committee.
Joe?
One thing you might want to look at in there also besides sickness is family emergencies.
Mm-hmm. What is that? I couldn't hear you.
Joe suggested besides family emergencies.
Family emergencies need to be counted in there also.
Mr. Chairman.
Marshall.
How big a problem is this? I mean, we ourselves now are asking for some more regulations. How big a problem is this? He said it very best, that only a fool leaves his stuff over and costs $25-$30 a piece. I mean, what are we doing here?
We didn't ask for this. I didn't ask for it.
But all we're talking about extending from 5 days to 7 days. How big a problem is this? We're making regulations ourselves now. We're trying to get rid of some, or we're creating some.
I don't know. I'm not out there every day. Matter of fact, it's been many years since I had a chance to get out there very much. But the ghost pot collection program that you're familiar with, certainly it adds to the derelict pots. How much? I don't know. Maybe Dr. Kirk Havens has an answer for that. Whether it's just the sponge crabs in the hottest weather that's a problem, it's probably a little more than that, but in the big scheme of things, not sure. The idea is that at least from this committee's viewpoint, there are certain things that can be looked at as responsible management. And that's one of the charges the commissioner asked the committee to do, was to not only look at problems, but potential problems, and not only look at the regulations that are exacting, but also look for ways that generally there's better conservation. So that's my background.
Well, I understand the ghost spot. Not only sending your ghost pots cut off, don't have no buoys on them. These evidently they think they're abandoned. They're not abandoned. I mean, people don't abandon their stuff. I just think we're creating more regulations than we really need. If it's a big problem, I can understand that, but I don't see it over home. That's something you need to, you know, ask this committee.
Marshall, we have had situations where entire rigs were left out and people had to come before the commission, but we do have existing regulations for other gear types that are similar to this. In other words, you can't abandon gill nets for an indefinite amount of time. But right. I have Joe and then Ken.
I was going to say, I'm going to give you an example. Last
just
year,
a minute there, Joe. Mr. Dyes, I'll get right to you. Hang on.
Last year, Roger Warren had an agent fishing for him in Lynn Haven. The agent stopped working, and Roger's gear just sat there for months, and there was no way to get it out of there. And that's just one example. I could think of many, many, many more examples. So there has to be some way to get the gear out of there if somebody just wants to leave it.
Ken?
Yeah, I see it that anybody who's crabbing and is working for a living is going to be fishing their pots every day, every other day. And I know at home they are people that have a license. They work on a job. They go out there, they put the crab pots overboard, and it might be 10 days before they go out there and crab them. And it's, I mean, you do see that. I think that, you know, this goes back to the Marine Police again. When it used to be just inspectors, they all knew the watermen. They knew who was doing well and who wasn't doing well. And, I mean, I think if it's that kind of rapport there, that the officer would know that, you know, that's a regular crab or something must be wrong if he's not. But I think they are people that I know at home they are, the people that have pots out there and don't fish them regularly.
Thanks, Ken. Mr. Dyes?
I'm sorry. I didn't know the meeting had been moved. I made a prior engagement. I'm already 10 minutes late for it. And I got to
conclude the meeting. No problem. Did you have any final comments, Mr. Dyes?
Well, I did want to say something about the stock assessment, but
sure.
I've talked to Rob and I've talked to Jack. There's got to be seems to me, I know everybody's saying that it's salience, there's salience, but there's people behind this salience. There's got to be a level of biasness behind it. We've obviously seen it at Waterman. I know in the salience world they don't think so, but Rob, I think it was Rob, even said it himself, salience may not be what it used to be with the grant money that's available now. If there's no problem, there's no money. And we've certainly, in all areas, GIAC's very familiar with the fiasco that's going on in the oyster field. We've got scientists going against scientists. There's got to be a level of biasness that's got, and just like we are, we're biased for going to work all the time. It was no surprise. If you don't believe me, I asked Jack. I told him 2 years ago these numbers were going to go way up because it was in all honesty, it was a panel full of Ron Lipschitz. And it should have come as no surprise that these numbers were going to go up. When we have the next one, it'll go way up again. It's just the way that it is, and that's all I need to say.
Said a lot.
Well, Dan, thanks for your comments. I would point out this was an excellent stock assessment panel. If you look at their credentials, they include some of the top assessment scientists up and down the East Coast, and the level of review that it was subjected to was very substantial. The CIE reviews that these go through are essentially a gold standard for stock assessment reviews.
Well, I understand that, but we've also had the same trouble with some of these scientists in the oyster field. You can tell me the credentials, but what I've seen, you can't tell me.
I appreciate it, Dan. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Indeed. Other comments on the proposed tending rule?
It's good that we hear more about this situation, and I mean, really, as a sort of indication of the committee. The committee in its advisory role. That carries a lot of emphasis. So even something that the staff has some inkling about that might aid conservation, I hope the committee can separate the exacting times when regulations are exacting from planning times. And so I would view the culling and the tending sort of planning that really need the advice of the committee. And I think that's what the proposal is tonight. I mean, the tending really would be something that should start up, I would guess, in March as well, I mean, if need be.
Jack has a comment on this point.
Just on the tending requirement, you know, the one thing that concerns me is public perception. And if you go back to when we put the cloud-based tending requirement on buildings, that's part of what we were trying to solve. The last thing you want is a member of the public out there seeing a gill net full of dead fish. And you know what that, you know, when that happens, you know what it leads to. And I think potentially have the same problem here with the trap. You know, somebody gets one caught in the wheel, they pull it up, it's got a bunch of dead things in it, which obviously we're going to left there for a while.
Or it's passed up waste by
we have to have a rule to solve the problem. We want one that doesn't affect legitimate fishing activities, obviously, but allows enforcement to occur in cases where it needs to.
Well, and just with respect to the timing of it, if we go ahead and approve it and put it in place, then at the end of the season, if any rigs are abandoned, then law enforcement would be in a position to take those up.
They're already in position for that.
Yeah, but season's closed. Pot's got to be up.
Yeah. Right. Chris?
My comment is I agree with Marshall. I think anyone who's fishing pots is going to find them. But I'm not on the water as much as a lot of you all are, but I see – pots that have gotten, not necessarily abandoned, but they've gotten moved because they've gotten caught in a wheel or for some other reason, and everybody knows they're abandoned pot. They're covered in algae, everything like that. I think this just gives law enforcement a way to remove those during the season, which is going to keep them from becoming a ghost pot at some point.
Further comments on the proposed tending requirements? Pete, go ahead, then I have Johnny.
We have a crabber where we crab, and Ray Wicker's in here. He works on it. He'll crab at the most opportune time of the year, and then as soon as things change economically a little bit in the fall, this fellow will quit in October, and he won't pick his gear up until December. We have to work around it every day, and it's sitting there. There's another fellow over in the mouth of Lafayette, where we were the other day, that'll set peeler pots in the spring, and then they just leave them all summer. And you have to dodge and work around them all the time. You know, I don't know what you do about it. These are full-time crabbers when they're crabbing. But when they quit, they just leave stuff, or they'll leave stuff and go somewhere else. It's not a common thing, but it's something you do see from time to time. The concern I have with it is just what has been expressed. How do you solve that problem and not harm yourself at the same time?
Well, I think part of the solution to that is simply allowing the commissioner discretion to grant a variance through his designee for special circumstances. Johnny?
I'm just, you know, curious how it's going to be enforced. How are they going to manage and regulate that rule of the law? How are they going to do it? They're going to mark it like a park in your car, and you come back 30 minutes and the mark's still there, your violation? Or how are you going to mark the pot?
Yeah, they are going to mark them, and just like they do at the gill net, I guess they'll place a tag on there that'll provide the number to call, and then 24 hours later see what happens. So that's
so it may be the fifth day that it's been sitting there, for all we know. But you're going to give it 7 or 10 days beyond that before you take action?
No, it's a 24-hour response after the Marine police officer is sure that it's been untended for 5 days.
Right, but right. Johnny's point is it may have already been sitting
there. It may
there
have been
for
there for a month
days.
Before you
right.
struck it,
yeah, before you
tagged
it. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I think in all likelihood that's going to be the case. Paige?
We also have times with storms, you know, when pots are displaced hundreds of yards and fishermen don't find them because the water's up, and then unless another fisherman in that area informs him that he's got pots down the river, we don't know where they are. I mean, we ride the river to try and find them, sure, because we don't want to lose them. But there's another variance there also.
Well, it would be a new focus, and I'm sure law enforcement would adapt and be very willing to understand that there's problems, and then there's problems that are caused by unforeseeable situations. So, I mean, I can't see that law enforcement wouldn't be very willing to cooperate with those types of situations.
Mr. Chairman?
Wait. It probably does now, I would assume, in some cases.
I could see where it could be a problem in my area. I have crabbers that maybe have 500 or 600 crab pots out, father and son. Well, they'll fish half of them this day, and a couple days later fish the other half. They could be going 4 or 5 days between fishing pots, and they're all in the same area. Well, I don't see how law enforcement could say what pots they fished and what they haven't, and it looks like me, it's just creating more problems than it'll be solving.
Mr. Chairman,
what
do you propose for a penalty? We haven't seen the paperwork of any of that. Would it be that you just lose the pots? Do you lose the pots and then they mail you a ticket? Or do you have to go get the pots in order to get the ticket? Or what do you do? What's the penalty?
Well, right now it's a situation where the pots will be confiscated. And then from there it's up to enforcement. I mean, there's nothing in the regulation the way it stands now in terms of it being definite. So, I mean, that's part of what we'd have to firm up. Part of why, you know, it's good to introduce this to you. There's clearly some split in opinion on this. I'm not sure a 7-day period would even help in Mr. France's area. It sounds like we don't know. So, I mean, if there's this much polarity, I guess, friendly polarity, then, you know, we ought to gear this one along with the crab culling. But I think overall, I have the impression that this is a good situation, that you're thinking it's a good situation. You just want all the details worked out.
Was there any discussion with law enforcement at the committee meeting about what the penalty might be, if I could ask the chairman?
Cited.
So there would be a a ticket issued.
Be cited.
I would say, you know, if it has an identification number on it and the law enforcement can put the pot to the person, they realize it hasn't been fished, then a warning should be issued or called and say, if this pot hasn't been fished or removed, then you will receive a ticket. Sometimes pots can be moved, like Paige said, by wind or storms or anything, and I don't see, unless it's, you know, a blatant act of some sort where a ticket should be issued, they should be warned, I would think, at first.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, just if I can follow up on Rob's point, I mean, it sounds like this needs some more revision before it's finalized. So why don't we table it for now, keep it in the committee, and we'll try to work out the details. But I think it does make sense because we have other requirements on other gear types, so that abandoned gear can be removed. But we can certainly work as a committee with staff to try to hammer out the details. If there's no objection to that, all right, we'll do that by consent. Thank you, Rob.
I appreciate all the good comments.
Yeah, next item.
I'm not sure what the next item should be, frankly, but you know, because of the idea that the agenda really says, and I think everyone knows what it means, status quo versus other changes, and I think what's intended there is that despite the new assessment and despite the new stricter target, we certainly have in 2010, with the abundance we had there compared to 2011, in 2009, we're still looking at what we did in 2008. As I stated earlier, the commission hasn't really varied too much from that plan, and you see it in front of you now. And I guess to address the issue of not status quo, but other changes, I know what the commission has lived by is, if you're going to make a change, how are you going to compensate for that? And I've heard a number of you talk about that tonight. I don't think by this point that you should be under the impression that staff is going to the commission for additional regulations. However, should there be recommendations and ultimately a decision by the commission that does establish changes to this plan, then staff certainly will be letting the commission know that there has to be compensation in some other ways in terms of conservation. And that's tough to do because if you look at what's here, one compensation, let's just say things change and you want to loosen somewhere, the sanctuary could go back to May 1. But frankly, that's a rather small savings overall, at least the way we have figured it since 2008. It's not a big impact. I think what you should probably look at are the percentages here that even when the crab dredge fishery was moved to a seasonal basis, that's 38% of the original 38% of the 34%. So, you know, it's a sizable portion there, and I think probably the situation is that if you make any relaxations, you don't have far to go with the Peeler size limit. You don't have far to go with the sanctuary, the coal ring. The season closure could be moved back, and last month at the commission evaluation, what we determined was that, for example, if you wanted to open a week of the crab dredge season, you would move back the closure in the fall to the 15th, so the closure would be November 15th. If you wanted a month of crab dredge season, you would move back the closure in the fall to November 3rd. So those are just things to think about. What we did then was to look at the last year when there was really harvesters, 48 harvesters were active in 2007 on a calendar year basis, and taking the harvest they had, which was not a large harvest, which would be larger now, the abundance certainly greater than it was in 2007, and then just subtracted poundage from the hot season. At the same time, you know, I'm not the first one to say it, but I've certainly been on board, it's been many years, There is waste in the crab dredge fishery. As we go through this, the amount of waste varies depending on who you talk to. We have two former crab dredgers in our agency. They certainly indicate that fact. When our staff was on board quite a while ago, 20 years ago, in certain areas, the waste on board was kind of extensive. That's been a big issue. I'm not necessarily launching into the crab dredge issue, but certainly that's part of this plan here. But that's a big issue. Unknown waste. A big issue is the public perception that Jack talked about earlier. We've already received 30 letters. There'll probably be more to close the crab dredge fishery. Some of those letters I would call chain-type letters, but the majority of letters are very resource-conscious, ecosystem-conscious, recommending against it. So the commission will have all that on Tuesday. And again, the crab dredge has been closed for three seasons, and this would be the fourth season. This, I may need Rahm's help on this, because this was in a report done in 2000 by ODU and VIMS, and the conclusion was, there were several conclusions. One was females are taken in different parts of the fishery, and you know, many of you have said that. And I think what I've heard from others on staff is females are taken in the fishery, but those females in the overwintering area, they're proximal to spawning and other, and except for what crab pot occurs in the early spring, there they are. So if I can paraphrase the work that Rahm's been doing for many years, if you look at these graphs, you see that the abundance is different. Here's 240 million. This is the baywide abundance. So you have here a baywide abundance of age F1, female, one pluses, as we've been calling them tonight. It's in millions. You see as you go through the years that it's sort of variable. Not quite the spikes that Pete was talking about overall for the entire resource, but they definitely start dropping off. 1995, you're about a quarter of the abundance you were in 1991, and 1996, it picks up a little bit. It's interesting that 1998, 1999, that used to be the lowest point of all, 86 million crabs. And you can see with what Rahm has here, it certainly was low. 52 million were left to overwinter. And I think the conclusion that I saw in the document was 20 to 30% of what's there is depleted by the crab dredge fishery. That's just the harvest. That doesn't address the waste at all. And I'm not trying to infer that it does. It just talks about the harvest. Obviously, there must be a couple of warm periods here where you have crabs moving into that area, and VIMS typically now, as then, starts out in November before the actual dredge survey starts and then goes, I'd say roughly it's got to be near the mouth of the Rappahannock down, below the mouth of the Rappahannock down into the spawning area. So you have that information, and then Rahm started to put these together, and I asked Rahm if he wanted to present these, and he may want to talk about his last one, which I don't have up here from 2011. But 2005, all we wanted to show the commission, and you've seen this a little bit too, I believe, is that when a fishery was going, a crab dredge fishery, the redder, yellow abundance, brown abundance is high abundance. Blues are very low abundance. So by the time I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. By the time you get to February, they're very little abundance. Now, it's not, if you read this note, different random stations are sampled each month, such the peaks of abundance will not necessarily be in the same location. But overall, that's the trend. You go to 2008. So that is 2007 November, to 2008 February. Yes, there was a crab dredge fishery then, and you see quite a bit of abundance through here. You see the same sign by February. you know, this is light abundance in the blues. The code is actually up here where the real dark blue is 0, then 1 to 6. By the time you get down to the browns and the oranges, you're up to 100 or greater than 100 per tub. So this is 2008 in the main stem, and this is looking at 2008, which is 2007-2008 dredge season, and this is 2009, which is not the dredge fishery involved. It's just the winter dredge survey, the independent survey. You do see the abundance picks up. In 2010, you start to see a testament to what we see in the overall abundance from the bay-wide survey, which is, you know, there was a good spike in abundance in 2010. These are the zeros, the recruits, the small crabs under 2.4 inches, and you can see that 2009, the overall abundance throughout the bay backs up the fact that in 2010, the zeros, I think, were up to quite a high number, 345 million perhaps, which is the highest since 1993. So you see that information. That's information. It's been presented to the commission. Here's 2011, and it just shows that you do have pockets throughout the four-month period. What Rahm has also provided, which I don't have loaded right here, but he can tell us about it, is what the zeros look like, because I would suspect that this type of pattern in 2010 wasn't exactly repeated in 2011, if we have that somewhere.
Yes.
Okay. So.
It reflected that drop that we saw.
Right. So these are the types of things the commission's been seeing for several years. There's other information. You know, staff is certainly sensitive to this situation. At some point, you know, how do you work on this? The type of information we've had from the committee has been, kind of sporadic, number one, and secondly, things such as, well, we'll work December and part and half of January. Well, we know that's 70% of the harvest occurring there. Well, we'll go to 30 to 36 bushels. Well, we don't know anything about, at this day and age, what that means in terms of the effects on the other stock. What we do know is that there are certain aspects about the crab dredge fishermen that, you know, you can look at it any way you want to, but it's information. There are 53 crab dredge fishermen as of record in 2008. What have they done? As an aggregate, this is the process, 2007, 2009, and 2010. 2007 is chosen because there was a December 2007, there was a January through March 2007. It's not a seasonal basis, but it's a full year of dredging. Or the 4 months. And what you see is that crab dredge was about 34% of the total harvest. You move to 2009, mainly crab pot, 2010 mainly crab pot. Here's the harvest of the 53, and in most cases it's really 46 or 47. There are some that are not working, harvesting. In 2007, these individuals accounted for 4.2 million pounds. By 2010, they accounted for 4.4 million pounds. And I know there's, you know, a need for a full ghost pot collection program. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. But in the meantime, 47 of these 53 have been employed in the ghost pot collection program. And the average earnings from there are about $17,000. So even if you call this in 2 years rebounding without the dredge to the fact that it's the same amount of harvest, Staff also knows that out of the 47, 25 on an income basis are doing better than they did in 2007. Staff also knows that these 47 crab dredgers have a good, solid history of being good crabbers, crab potters, because they account for anywhere from 14 to 17% of the total crab pot harvest over the last 6 years, 47 individuals. This just gives you another piece of information, and it shows you how many harvesters. So 2009, there were more of the crab dredge, former crab dredge licensees who were peeler potting. In general, it trended up in terms of the number of crab pot harvesters. The commission did, in 2008, allow 13 former crab dredge fishermen to come off the waiting list, and four in the pot fishery and nine in the peeler fishery. So this is what I mentioned earlier. It's not meant other than a point in time, because we all hear information from the commissioner to everyone else about cut crabs and about waste, and this is something that staff knows. It looked at. Well, it's dated. It is dated, but there is damage. There is hard bottom areas. That's another aspect that the committee has talked about, that will work in soft bottom areas. But again, that's a suggestion. You know, at some point, does that become something that can be pinned down? So that's it on what I have for the crab dredge issue for the proposed closure.
Rob, just to take a step back and summarize where we are relative to the reference points, whether we look at the ones that we're currently using or the ones in the new stock assessment. Based on what you had said earlier about last year's catch, we were just below the target. If we carry forward last year's catch or look at this year's early period landings, it appears that we're going to be potentially above some of the targets this year. So
above the threshold.
Yeah. Well, point being, it doesn't appear we have room to liberalize mortality. I had hoped that based on where it looked like we were earlier in the year, that we would have some opportunity at this point in time to consider extending the pot fishery through the end of November or possibly even into December. And I think you had done some analysis of what types of additional mortality that would result in. But that's kind of where we are. So having said that, we need to have a discussion as a committee about whether we want to propose any changes. I know we want to have a discussion about the crab dredge issue.
Only thing I'd like to add, because I know people want to ask questions, but the other information hasn't been presented yet. The way it was presented prior was in terms of the waiting list information. But there is a lot of effort out there, some of which is coming into the fisheries in 2011, which complicates the situation you just talked about. So Jack's question and your questions about what should this fishery look like, or how do we get rid of these spikes, part of it is there's no real effort control. There are a lot of eligible crab pot and peeler pot fishermen who at any time can enter the fishery. There are a lot of peeler pot and crab pot fishermen who can certainly be opportunists and say, you know what, it's looked pretty good out there from what I can see. I'm not working 20 days this year. I'm going to work 40. And their neighbor says, me too. So there are all sorts of ways that there are not effort controls. The only effort control was started in 1999, and that was a moratorium on additional sale of gear licenses. And that was done after 1998, when the commission held a session till about 10 o'clock at night and really allowed effort into the fishery at the same time they knew they shouldn't. So that's the way things stand, and I have information on that if you want to talk about the waiting list. And it bears on the crab dredge fishery. It bears on the crab pot fishery, because until effort is addressed, And until it's known what kind of effort is out there, we're certainly not getting it for mandatory reporting on effort. Then you can start looking at what type of fishery is the future.
Why don't we go ahead and take some questions first, and then you can go through that. Pete?
The question I had was you mentioned that you knew what those 47 or 43 crabbers' income was. How did you obtain that?
It's aggregate income. It's not separated. It's a lump. We have mandatory reporting, as I mentioned earlier.
Well, you're guesstimating.
Well, not guesstimating. We have mandatory reporting, and each month we census a certain amount of buyers, and they provide a price. So we get an average price. So it's an average basis that would be applied to everyone.
So you're figuring in the value of the harvest based on what you get from the buyers at the time.
Yeah, it's it had bias either ways, Pete.
Yeah, I understand. I was just wondering how you achieve that. The other question I have is do you have any way of quantifying the value of the product in the wintertime beyond the harvester? What we've done by closing down this dredge fishery is put most of the pickers and packers in a part-time industry that previously had to some degree a full-time business. And that's something that we have to consider in this fishery is how much longer are the John Grahams and Jim Caseys and these type folks going to be able to maintain their businesses, you know, just a few months of the year. As the economy's gone like it has, the overall value of the product is not there like it used to be. And it's kind of a tough time, whereas there has been some demand for crabs in the wintertime, and you actually get more of a more value for them in the wintertime than you would in the spring, other than the first few days you work, because you end up with this glut of crabs on the market from everywhere, not just Virginia. They're Virginia, North Carolina, Delaware Bay, you know, South Carolina. The only place that there's been any crabs available in the wintertime has been a few from South Carolina, and that wasn't even very much last year. The Gulf, since that oil spill, has been pretty much, you know, off of everybody's screen just because of potential problems with the quality of the product. And, you know, who's to say the only benefit derived from the fishery is just the harvester? It goes way beyond that.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and I there's no way that with all that information that you can begin to do anything without some kind of economic valuation study. And the only thing I can respond to is that the commission certainly is advised by staff of what you just indicated about the wintertime, about not the economic value, but the value of not having crabs and then having crabs in the wintertime has meant to the industry in the past. I understand what you're saying.
Well, and in the broader sense, the question is directly relevant, I think, to what the industry wants the fishery to look like. And that's a good long-term structural discussion we can have. Ken?
I agree with Pete on that. Rob, you said you were talking about public perception with this crab dredge fishery. Were these the presentation, these slides you showed about the before and after, were they the same ones that were presented to the Sportsman Caucus, or do you know?
Yes, they were.
They are. I got that answers a big question there. One of the slides that I saw, I mean, the perception I had was that you had gone in and this showed how many crabs were there, and then you came back and you showed how many crabs were not there after the dredge had come through, and then you come back and you're showing something in 2009 or 10, and showing that after crab dredging has stopped, that you've got all these crabs. Well, one slide showed that there were no crabs in these tributaries, and then all of a sudden we stopped crab dredging, and now there are all these crabs up in the tributary. Well, nobody's crab dredging in the tributaries.
Yeah, I think you're... I mean, I know what you saw, but
I mean, but if I'm somebody that's familiar with it, and I'm talking about people that have got no idea, and they're looking and say, damn, look at all that. The crab dredgers are really taking those crabs out of there. That's certainly not helping public perception.
Then whoever is presenting that didn't do a very good job. So I did try and do a good job. The tributaries are the zeros. The emphasis there is throughout, from 2005 to 2008.
Can you go back and pull that
sure.
slide?
The emphasis is on the zeros rather than the one pluses. So if I'm lucky, let's see where we are. Okay. So I'm going to just go through it really quickly. We're talking about the spawning area here.
Yeah, I want to go back where you're showing the bay wide.
Yeah. Okay. Here's the spawning grounds, roughly the wrap a hammock down. And then we get into...
But you look at 208, and you don't see anything up these tributaries. And now you're looking over here at 209 and 210.
Well, this is the emphasis.
But the thing is, what I'm saying is that people that don't know anything think that the crabber is up here and has dredged these rivers and everything out. And that's showing, when that comes back like that, that's the perception that it's
giving. I politely disagree with you because this says age zero crab densities. The whole situation here... And if you follow to the 2011, the comments with Rom, we're trying to show that the abundance of age zero recruit crabs did pick up in 2010, as the Baywide Winter Dredge Survey says, and in 2011, you see a falling back of that. There's two different sizes of crabs. These are the small crabs, nothing to do with the winter dredge fishery. I can certainly see what your comment is based on. But I thought
I mean,
I understand
this.
But it's not real.
Saying, but
not
when,
real.
When the average guy is sitting out there and this stuff gets shown to him and he sees a picture like this, he doesn't know whether you're talking about age zero, age one. He doesn't know anything. He looks at that daggone picture, and that's his impression.
Here's the main gist of what Rom started, which I showed in those line drawings from 1991 on. This is really the central premise. This is a different situation. It's to emphasize the zero crabs and how they picked up.
I understand that. Okay. I just don't think the average person
would. Well, you know, they have to do a good job telling people that.
Are there any more specific questions of the committee before we go on to the on this part of the presentation, before we go into the wait list? Because I want to let Rob run through that. And let's come back and take up the crab dredge question and also the waitlist question.
I got a question.
Ty, go ahead.
Can you go back to that graph, 08, 09, 010?
Yes. Well, I'm doing it the slow way, sorry. Let's see. Let me try and speed that up a little bit. Let's try this one.
All right, now that's basically for the whole season, or is that for a specific month?
It's everything combined.
Everything combined.
Everything
combined.
All right,
combined. So the 08 is when a dredge fishery is active.
In the ocean off the shore.
There was a dredge fishery in, well, first of all, here's 08.
That's 07, 08 dredge season.
Yes, so that's active, yes.
All right, and then that's 09 is 08, 09.
Right.
10 is 9, 10.
Right.
All right, so you're going to compare notes on... The dredge fishery is active in 08, and they're taking samples behind a dredge fishery. And then they go back and they're taking all these samples on virgin bottom where there's no dredge fishery. And, that you know, for some reason, people think that crabs go and they sit in one area and they stay there. Well, in a warm winter like 08, 09, or 07, and 08, when a crab dredge fleet be 5 boats or 20 boats, gets in a school of crabs, might be an acre big, and there's enough life in those crabs. You make two swipes through those crabs, you catch a few, and then they swim out. So you got an acre of crabs all knotted up nice and tight. and you make a couple swipes, and then next thing you know, that acre has spread out to 5 acres. You go from catching one bushel to catching 25 crabs. And then the dredge fishery comes behind, or the dredge survey comes behind us, and they get these false readings. So then they're going out there on virgin bottom, on ice cold winters, when these crabs are locked up in these schools that they got in November and December, and they're locked up tight, and they're getting these, they're getting readings that are misleading, because we're not out there. They took the major factor out of that survey. For 20 years, they surveyed behind us, and now they want to go back and survey for 2 years or 3 years.
Apples and oranges.
Sampling on virgin bottom.
I mean, you know this is VIMS data, but what I can say is come back to this. No, I'm saying that so that you can understand that I don't have all the ins and outs of everything, but this is where it all started, and what I said here, based on what is in the report I read, is that in a season of the one pluses, the potential spawners, if you will, that the dredge fishery in these years was removing 20 to 30%, removal rate of 20 to 30%. So then that just moves forward in time. In my mind, this is the way I thought of this, and I presented this. This is probably the fourth time I presented this, and I'm always careful because to me, it's really the monthly progression, just like that former slide of all the years together. That was by month. It's really just focusing on the monthly progression. There aren't conclusions here, because I suppose one of the conclusions you could have would be that if we kept abundance to where it was in 2010 for several years, you could see, if I can get to it, you could see if this was 2012 or whenever you want to make the date, that it could very well look like this or this as well. I don't think anyone's coming to the conclusions about removing all the crabs, but I think the thing you should think about, and at least what staff has thought about, is at times when there's low abundance, there's not only the ability of a dredge to move to areas and work back and forth and have a high catchability, there's also the ability to have damaged crabs. And that's really where staff is, what staff's told the commission. I mean, that's what staff's told the commission. The commission makes the decision.
So the bottom line is the 47 or 53 dredgers are killing either by harvesting or damaging on the bottom. More crabs than the hundreds of crab potters with thousands of crab pots.
Well, there's more than one issue here, as you know, and I showed most of them tonight. And I don't think, I don't think everyone can wrap their arms around all the issues here, but one key issue is, the primary issue is, we have a conservation plan. The commission has not wavered by very much about that conservation plan. The crab dredge fishery was a large part of that conservation plan, but if you look at what the coal ring has done, because I know you've talked about the benefits of the coal ring, and if you look at how Mr. Dyes for a couple of years and Mr. Palmer were very interested in not having that sanctuary closed as much, you can tell that when 2008 regulations were put in place, they had a broad effect. So now you come to the present. The present is, should the dredge fishery be closed the fourth season? And the type of information I'm showing is that, and I haven't shown some of it yet, is that, I don't know whether it's 53 individuals, because that went by the books in 2008. If there were to be a crab dredge fishery, how many individuals should be in it? I think that's question number one. The second thing is, you do have a pot fishery. They take a lot of crabs. They take a lot of crabs that would spawn. All the fisheries do. Crab fishery now is bigger than it was in the past. But there's that question of the overwintering stock, first-time spawners. You have that to look at. Then there's the question of participation. not only are there 10 times as many participants to look out for, whoever's going to look out for them, the commission, in the spring, which it's not all about numbers, especially since a part of that 10 times more includes the very people that you're mentioning who are benefiting and have been shown to benefit from the increased abundance, wherever it came from.
That's the key question.
Did it come from recruitment? Did it come from regulations? Did it come from a combination? And so, I mean, that's the information we have. And I think there's some more information here which bears on this big question, which everyone on staff says it'll be nice when the time comes that the committee and staff start to plan together. So after tonight, I hope that's something that we all look forward to.
Mr. Rob, Rom had a comment to the point that Ty raised. I'd like to hear that, and then we are running behind, so I'm going to let Rob run through the rest of the presentation. Let me get Rom's comment. Yeah.
We haven't changed anything about the DREDGE survey. Of those samples, water collected in November before the DREDGE victory, water in early December, and the other half, water in January and February. So we haven't changed anything. It's been done the same way for the last 20-odd years.
That's what I'm saying. It's doing the same thing except for one thing, the DREDGE fishery. And that's a major factor. When you go behind somebody, if I go behind somebody dredging, he's catching 6 barrels or 6 bushels, and I come behind him, I'm not going to catch that many. He's already caught them. So when you come behind me and sample, you're not going to get the accurate sample.
We are getting accurate.
No, because that huge amount of crabs that was there, I'm not catching them all.
Right, but I'm not going to the same spots. I'm sampling randomly.
It can't be without the DREDGE fishery.
I've got Marshall.
Jack, been here a long time. I know the power of staff. What will it take for you to support opening the crab DREDGE fishery? And when we can save a lot of time here. What will it take for staff to support opening the crab DREDGE fishery?
Depends on whether you want to open it and give up something else.
Yes.
Want to keep everything the same and open. In other words, not make up for opening it up.
Yes.
That's right.
That's right. So we'd basically have to take away from peeler potters and crab potters, and we'd have to take away that in order to give it to the crab dredgers.
You've got to maintain the fishing mortality rate at the new target for a period of years to the point where you see abundance reach the new target level. For a period of years, and then I think what you do, whether it's the dredge fishery you're talking about reopening or anything else, what I would suggest you do is you slowly make changes to the fishery. You slowly relax the regulations and see how that affects your abundance and your mortality rate the following year. And if everything looks good, you do a little bit more. You might start, when the numbers get good, you might start by opening the dredge fishery to the original 46 or 48 that Rob mentioned, with a bushel limit in a small season and keep them all part of bottom areas and things like that.
What's the average age of those individuals, and how many do you think are still going to be around when this comes about?
We've already hit the new target once. We did it last year. So it's not like we're talking.
Mr. Chairman, I haven't finished it. Mr. Chairman, I haven't finished yet.
To that point, go ahead, Marshall.
Jack, we were talking about looking at long-term management. He just did that. He just showed us where we're going to go and what we're going to do. I think crab dredging, we can sit here and bang our head on this table all night long. That is not going to happen unless we give up a whole lot of crab potters, peeler potters. That's what's got to happen. Jack, you just said that, yes. Crab dredging will not be open unless we give something else up. Now, am I right? Yeah, that would. Yes. I mean, thank you. I mean, that's as honest and straightforward as you can get. He just did that. Thank you, Jack.
I have.
Indeed. And I think, you know, it's fair to say that, I mean, the context of where we are currently in terms of current fishing mortality relative to the targets, we can't add mortality. So if you want to add a program that adds mortality and, for example, reopen the dredge fishery, it's got to come out of the existing fishery. But I think that's why we have to have that longer-term discussion that people are beginning to talk about. And we have talked about that. I mean, we need to engage with the industry and through this committee to have that long-term discussion about a vision, developing a vision for the management of the blue crab fishery. And that gets at all these structural elements that include latent effort. We currently do not have a limited access system that's really robust to controlling effort because we have part-time licenses that are active but aren't precluded at all from becoming full-time licenses. We have very few licenses that are actually active on a full-time basis. So if we're going to get a handle on the vision of the fishery, I think we have to put the state in a position to manage that aspect of it, and we're not there yet. And that's relevant to this question of the waiting list. It's relevant to what we ultimately do with the limited access program. Rob, go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, the commission would like to hear your advice on this issue. Waiting list. I'm going to try and go through it faster for fear that you might hear my voice as you're driving home, and I don't want to do that to you. So you can see we left 867, started on the waiting list, 320 left. And you can see the reasons that they were allowed to get the license back. What we tried to do was to look at the number of years from 2000 to 2003. So, in other words, none of the individuals on the waiting list did any crabbing from 2004 to 2007. This is 2000 to 2003. This is the previous 4 years. So that means 120 out of 190 didn't crab at all since before 2000, and they're on the waiting list. 70 crabbed 1 year out of the four, and 15 out of 190 crabbed 4 years. And it's not that they had a lot of harvest, but all they had to do was have some harvest. So that's the crab pot waiting list 2000 to 2003. This just shows you how many pots might be out there if you take the categories, about 35,000 hard crab pots and 27,000 peeler pots. This shows the peeler pot, pretty much the same trend. 79 of 130 haven't crabbed at least since 1999. Seven crabbed all 4 years, and that's about it. I think what Jack was talking about just a minute ago was that there are other ways to shape the fishery, but right now what's really bearing on it pretty heavily is this effort. Have you seen this before? Okay. Well, just as a quickie then, obviously there are very few years where the amount of active licenses, this red line in the fishery, matches up to what the target removal rate should be or the threshold. This should look familiar here where there's these large gaps between what the licenses should have been to make the target or the threshold and what the licenses actually were, because this is that big trough from 1998 up to about 2005. So low abundance, too many licenses. Not just in Virginia. You know, you'd have to look at the Maryland data as well and PRFC and everything else. But the problem is, even in a good year like 2010, you've got an extra 150 licenses that could be part of the fishery or could have come in 2011. We don't know. And, you know, that's troubling. You also have the situation that you have to add the 190 onto that. They're on the waiting list. Should they go in and start crabbing right away? Okay. Joe worked this up for me to look at, and I think it's pretty good because what it shows you is the crab pot waiting list according to what I think it was Tom and Powers, and there may have been someone else asked about this full-time fisherman. You know, what did they do in other fisheries? And that's what's meant by right here, full-time activity recent. So that's greater than 100 days in other fisheries. And they had some crab pot in the past. Six individuals. If you look at all these other scenarios, it's either no activity in both fisheries, part-time activity in all the other fisheries, no activity in the other fisheries with some crab pot. So really, I think last time around we said there might be about eight individuals who are full-time. If you throw in the crab pot information, it's about six off the crab pot waiting list of 190. You do the same thing with the peeler pot. I'm just going to jump down to show you they've got full-time activity for 2008-2010. That's what this is based on. And some peeler pot back in 2000 to 2003. The other categories, really not doing much. I mean, one thing to keep in mind, the commission went to a eligibility in 2004, meaning that you don't have to buy your license. That's where a lot of the waitlist people got in trouble, not for not buying their license, but for not participating in the fishery for 1 pound. But in 2004, because of a clerical error that had happened in 2002 on the part of staff, we went all the way back to 2000 and gave the benefit of the doubt and brought in individuals who had been licensed back in 2000, made them part of the eligibility list for 2004. A lot of those same individuals who got a second chance didn't do anything on the waiting list. This is another situation started with Dr. Kirkley from VIMS, and it shows again that 2010, it shows the bad times where you had all these peeler pot licenses, but too many. And then what shows more strikingly than in the crab pot fishery, you've got 181 licenses that sat there in 2010 that were perfectly eligible to become part of the fishery. Those of you in the fishery might have a better idea of what you would expect out of those 189. You might have a better ballpark estimate of how many would want to come in. So you also have the waiting list on top of here, another 130 individuals here. And I think when you see these, the reason I want to show them again is if that's not a problem, we don't know what is. If you don't know how much effort's out there, even from the people who are fishing, crabbing, and you don't know how much effort might come in, it's really troubling. So that's what I have on the waiting list. And I know the commission would like to hear on these issues from the committee for next Tuesday.
Well, Rob, when we went through this issue originally in the committee, we had discussions that, to the effect that there would have to be some sort of analysis when these licenses came off the waiting list to confirm that, in fact, there wouldn't be any harm to the resource of the industry by reactivating. We ended up amending the regulation to reflect that fact to the point that it says it would be a limited entry program developed, et cetera.
Right, that's 2009.
And so now we're in a difficult situation because we're confronted with a situation where our current fishery, the people that are making a living on it today, day in and day out, are in a position to exert enough effort to take the target. We also have over 100 eligible licenses currently in that pool, and then potentially might add up to 300 or more licenses back in. And now we have new biological targets as well. So it leaves us in a difficult situation from what I can see, because if we make a decision to let the licenses become active and they result in additional fishing mortality, that has to come out of the existing fishery. Does staff have any specific recommendations?
I think it may be perceived as disingenuous, but staff thinks it's fair that everyone is going to have this new target of 215 million. It was made very clear that the 200 million interim target of both sexes was an interim target. It was made clear that a stock assessment would start in 2010 and be available, and the commission knew that. So the staff interest is to use this new target. and establish the same situation in the regulation that we had, which is three consecutive years of 215 million female age one plus crabs. At that time, it still reverts to the plan of a limited and delayed entry. That won't change, but again, you know, that seems fair to staff, that if the target has changed, so have the provisions. They're still on the waiting list. You've probably seen that the waiting list is not that active in the past, even before 2004, and you've probably also heard that there were lots of opportunities to get off the waiting list, the way other fisheries do as well. I'd asked about the striped bass fishery. The amount of entrance into the striped bass fishery since 1998 with limited entry and ITQ is about double what it started with. When the commission did that, that's what they expected. They called it free market enterprise. Anyone on the waiting list could have transferred back in the fishery, gone through the buyback. So that's what staff thinks.
Thank you, Rob.
A couple questions for Rob.
Yeah, go ahead.
Rob, if you go back two slides there,
okay,
you had made the ones with the blue going to the right there. You talked about people who were on the waiting list that are involved in other FIS.
Yes.
Other fisheries, and you were able to determine a full-time or less than full-time. Is that all based on pounds landed in other fisheries?
This is days worked.
Days worked.
So it's actually is what people report is days worked.
Days of harvest.
Days of harvest.
1 pound of harvest.
Okay. In any other fishery whatsoever?
Any other species, 2008 to 2010.
Okay.
Other questions or reactions to Rob's presentation on this?
Are we looking at a potential increase in pots being fished? And the reason I'm saying this is because in my area, you know, I know a couple of carpenters that are out of work, they've got crab pot license.
Agents or?
Whatever they can get, if they can buy one, they'll buy one. If they can become an agent, you know, farmers, seafood restaurant owner, I know four or five people that are planning on going crabbing.
We have limitations, and this committee has talked about them many times, but right now it's 100 transfers per year max, unless it's a family member. So 100 at the time it was set seemed reasonable to the committee and to staff and everyone else. So anything that picks up in your area or other areas wouldn't even have to be a transfer. You've got those eligible fishermen who, for whatever reason, don't want to be active crabbers.
Like I know one gentleman that said he bought
his license, right,
but he could not crab till next year,
right,
because of there had already been a certain amount of transfers. Is that right?
Well, if he had the license, he could crab. But, yeah, after 100, that's it. And no.
Yeah.
No. 70.
I even know a farmer.
Okay.
What's the what advice does the committee have for the commission on this question about the waiting list? You've heard staff's recommendation is that we tie it to the new target for the same period. Is that it?
Three consecutive years of the 215 million female.
Ken?
I think that those six full-time watermen should have their license. I mean, I'd hate to see them get their license and then go ahead and sell it, you know. But, if they're full-time watermen and they figure they need crabbing to help them make an income, I certainly feel as though they should have those licenses back.
You said
so six in one fishery and eight in the other.
May have been six and
16.
Five.
Six and
eight.
Look.
Six and eight.
Was it eight? Thank you, Joe.
Six and eight. Eight in the field.
And is it possible they could be the same people?
Yeah, or some of the same people.
Is there any way to put a stipulation on her that you couldn't transfer your license for 3 years?
Period.
Yeah.
Or have an agent use it.
So
yeah, or have an agent use it. Yeah, you're giving them that license back. And I mean, say they're gill netting, and all of a sudden they're no croaker, they're no spot, there's nothing. He's got to feed his family. Well, he can go out and gives him that opportunity.
council made.
So is it the concern of the committee that we would recommend reinstating those 8 and 6 licenses with the stipulation
that they not
be transferred? That's fine.
I'll
Ken,
second it.
You want to make the motion?
Well, I think we make it that we reinstate the 6 active hard potters and the 6 active peeler potters, and they cannot transfer that license for 3 years.
Or utilize an agent.
Or utilize an agent.
Is there a second to the motion? Second by Pete. Do you have strong feelings about 3 years? I mean, is there any reason that you would want them to transfer that license after that? Because
we're
back in the same situation.
You know, if you go buy a piece of stock, just let me say this. If you go buy a piece of stock, you can sell that stock. This equipment of ours is kind of like a stock. I mean, that's just my feeling about it. I mean, we've invested in it. We ought to be able to get something out of it.
What if we tie it to the 215? Can't be transferred until because that's when the other ones become available.
That's what I was thinking about, the 3 years.
Well, that's what I say. Tie it.
Oh, the sale of.
Right. You can't transfer.
I have no problem with that. I'll amend my motion to that.
Second or agreeable to that?
That's 215 for 3 years. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it applies. So the same. Okay. It cannot be sold until we hit.
Right.
The same target we are.
For 3 consecutive years.
Okay. Or used as an agent.
Right.
Okay.
Both things.
Both things.
Want to get a discussion?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Marshal?
3 consecutive years, 215. So we can go 2 years and get a 215 and then miss one, and then he's got to wait 3 more.
To sell it?
Correct.
To sell it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
He's not eligible to fish now. Right.
Okay.
Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's approved by consent. Thank you.
The only detail we'll look is whether there's overlap. Whether it's the same individual
right.
that might be peeler and hard pot.
But he'd still be entitled to those licenses.
Right. Right.
It just may be less than the 14. It may be less than 14 people. So
yes.
Right.
Rob, you want to go on to the and again, we still need to have as a committee, I think it's clear, a long-term discussion about these questions as well. That's I think pretty clear in that capacity analysis. Rob, you want to go back to the winter dredge fishery?
Yes.
What I was going to ask for the committee's comments and recommendations related to that issue.
I mean, I just have the slides. That's all. Right.
Right. And the commission is advertised to maintain the existing closure on the winter dredge fishery.
Right.
And wants the advice of the committee related to that matter.
I think you need to wait for Ty to get back before that's, unless Marshall wants to take it up or somebody else.
We can wait.
Yep. Do you want to do the identification numbers then? While they're out.
Is there any specific advice needed on that, Rob, or do you want to see if there's any reaction to that question?
Well, the committee has looked to comment and give a recommendation on all the items, and I think you did a great job on the two that we're going to still work on the culling and tending. So the identification seems pretty straightforward so far, and from what I can tell, law enforcement is fine with it.
Does the committee have any concerns about those proposed measures?
Well, I think we ought to make it hard if we can on anybody from Maryland and make them buy 6 sets of buoys every year.
Can I get a second to that motion? All right.
What does Maryland do with Virginia people?
Beg your pardon?
What does Maryland do with Virginia people?
They allow
Virginia numbers.
I mean, Potomac River, we just put the Virginia number on there and the Potomac River number on there. And it's not a problem.
Other than Pete's concern, is there any concern about the proposed modification to regulation? All right, seeing none. We'll let that stand.
Okay, thank you.
I was asking Ty while you were out what the pleasure of the committee is on the matter of the proposed continued closure of the winter crab dredge fishery.
I'm against it.
The commission's looking for specific advice, so I'll entertain motions that would provide advice to the commission.
Well, I mean, my advice is I sent an email to Jack and Rob and Rom. You know, if we could get it open on a partial opening for the first year, develop a study on how to study the fishery to see if there is problems in areas and when these time frames are, because you really can't say exactly where and when this is. And the only real option I see, you know, to preserve the female is to put a larger coal ring in the crab pot in the bay. As far as tributaries, it wouldn't have to be activated, but to protect the female in the sanctuary area or in the bay area where they congregate, especially in the summertime or the early spring when they come out of hibernation, you know, that 2 7/16 coal ring, which they've done a study on, Roms, you know, that's about the only option I would have. You know, thousands and thousands of crab pots out there releasing more and more females would most likely cover the amount of crabs that a handful of dredgers are going to come back dredging. A lot of them aren't going to come back. Most of them don't work a full season anyway. And, you know, industry needs it. You know, the picking houses need it. The retail stores need it. New York City needs it. Two winters in a row, there's been no hardly any crabs come out of the south. And we could have, the state could have, you know, benefited richly from the revenues coming from, you know, the crab harvest that we would have had, reduced the limit. You know, it's a controlled fishery. Your rig comes back every day. Crab pots are out there fishing 24/7, no matter what. There's mortality in them. Hot summertime, you know, doesn't matter. Every fishery's got a mortality. If you're worried about mortality in a fishery, you better shut everything down, because the gill netter's got mortality, oystermen, clammers. I mean, you're not going to stop mortality.
They're losing more fish right now. They can take a stick out and put a crab in.
And I'm going to tell you something else about a crab. A crab is the most resilient creature in the bay. I've caught them in my crab pots now. That is, nobody's been out, as far as dredge fleets, been out there dredging. And they've got nicks and cuts where their gills are hanging out. They're still alive. The shell's growing back over top of it. We can go out there and nick and cut crabs, and they're still going to live. Some of them are going to get demolished. The conchs will feed on them. The fish will feed on them. The markets are going to benefit from what we do bring ashore. The majority of what we don't touch or nick or cut are going to grow back, and they're going to keep living. It's ridiculous to say that mortality is a reason for shutting this down, and there's no proof to say that closing dredging created those big comebacks. I say the coal ring did it. And I say a bigger coal ring in a sanctuary or the bay in the spring and in the fall has to be open. If you're crabbing in the bay, you got to have the coal ring while the sanctuary is open. When the sanctuary is closed, close the coal ring. If you're in the rivers, don't even put it in your pot. That's my advice.
Ken?
You know, when we looked at the slides, there was a whole lot of stuff about estimate. We can't quantify what any one regulation has done to bring these back. And this stuff about 24% cut crabs and one thing or another, and that was something that was 20 years ago that somebody saw, and they can't quantify that either. I think they're just going on another estimate again. That what Ty is talking about, I mean, if we're going to ever get this fishery back, it's time to really make a good study of it. And it might be a very limited entry this year, and for the crab dredgers and the scientists to work together where we get some of these answers. One slide, and I'm just grabbing this out, and I know more crabs came back, but if you look at what the dredgers caught and then what the crabbers caught in April, it came up to 4,000 pounds. And here the crabbers, the crab potters now are catching 4,000 pounds. Now, I know more crabs came back, one thing or another, you can make that argument. But, I mean, it could be that they're catching the crabs in the wintertime where they can get big money for them, and then turn around that same crab they're catching in April, and they can't get as much money for them. I mean, I think it needs to be a good scientific study done on it, and it might be justification for reopening this fishery.
Ken, do you want to request that some sort of study be done in the future on it, on dredge mortality?
Oh.
And I'm not saying that, that we can identify resources now for that, but.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Let me see.
I don't know how to put that in a motion.
Okay.
You might have to call it winter mortality. Because what we had this winter die off this winter. What percentage of those crabs would we have gotten some value out of that were going to die off anyway? You know, what percentage that were sold potentially would die off in a cold winter?
Give me some valid questions.
And we had a discussion, Jack and I, about winter die-off the other day. And it wasn't that cold last winter. We had many winters. When I first started dredging it, the whole bay was frozen over. And all the upper bay fleet would have to come down the lower end of the bay and stay. Most of Tangier would come to Little Creek and Lynn Haven and Hampton.
It wasn't that cold, but what we saw was it got cold real quick.
Right. You know, I've seen crabs piled up on Cape Henry with ice floes and starfish, you know, just truckloads of them in the wintertime. It was years that we had a lot of mussels, and I think it was crabs that were pretty much untouchable by the dredges. Until, you know, you had a disturbance like that that turned the bottom all over. How many of those crabs are you going to lose later on in the year that we might have been able to catch in December? The other thing about dredge mortality, it all depends on the bottom you work on, and not necessarily the time of the year, but the type of bottom. I've dredged up off of the Rappahannock in February, and it's this real mucky, sticky mud bottom, but you never damage a crab up there. And when they come up, it's cold enough that they don't move at all. But then you go right across the bay to that hard bottom over there off Cape Charles and over there, and you destroy them. So when we went through all this exercise a couple of years ago, we tried to include that in a proposal, if you remember, to keep the dredge fishery open, that different areas would be off limits and different times of the year would be off limits and whatnot. I think these things need to be addressed in potentially opening this back up.
Joe?
I think that one day the dredge fishery should come back, if for no other reason than the infrastructure. We've discussed that before, and I know I discussed that at the last Virginia Watermen's Association meeting. It's not just the crabbers. It's the people who sell the crabs. It's the people who pick the crabs. It's the people who ship the crabs. When I spoke with David Bell a few weeks ago, David said it seems that every year when March comes, he has to reestablish his markets because he's lost all his markets to the southern states. But with the new stock assessment numbers that we have to look at, I don't think this is the year to bring dredging back. I think it's something to look at for the future with limited areas and with a smaller bushel catch per boat, but I don't think this is the year to do it.
I would echo Joey's comments on that. I think there's a point in time that we can have a conversation about reopening the fishery in a manner that's sustainable with the other fishery, other components of the fishery. But with the, we're still at the beginning of an upward slope, which we hope will continue on that upward slope. And I don't think we want to do anything that's going to endanger that.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Oh, you asked me if I'd make a motion a minute ago. Still don't know that I'm ready to make that motion, but I think that they've been very valid points brought up here. And I think that maybe we should make some type of a motion. I mean, maybe it's not to open the season this year, but it's that next year, this season starts, I don't know, maybe we pick out the crab dredgers again by how much effort they have worked, you know, throughout the year, or how they're affected in some type of a way, and that this study is done, but it puts these people back together and see if we can't get this fishery to go. Oh, there was a J-Lark study done back in 84. I mean, our seafood industry has just gone to hell. No other word to say it than that. But in 84 or 86, whenever that J-Lark study was done, there were 8,000 watermen in the bay working. 4,000 of them came from my area, the Northern Neck. I mean, that's how many it was. But one thing they said in that J-Lark study was they were trying to preserve the crab dredgery fishery. I mean, you go back and you look at it. They talked about how much money it bought into this state and how important it was to this state. And their biggest concern in that study was Maryland coming in here on it. And I don't know how many Maryland crabbers were dredging in the last, you know, so many years, but we can certainly eliminate that. That's one thing we tried to do with that bill the other day, that if you don't allow other year, that if you don't allow it in Maryland, you can't do it here. But we really need to come up with something, and we can tie it into science. And I think that if we tie it into science, that we have a chance of getting this fishery to come back, or having a chance to go out here and work, and the watermen don't have to be compensated when we're talking about allotting money. The watermen don't have to be able to do it. I mean, their catch is what they would get paid. I mean, the watermen are now asking the scientists to come on their boats and to do it. VIMS wouldn't have to supply any equipment. They wouldn't have to do anything but supply a vehicle to get those technicians on the boats, and that's the only money they'd have to allot for, is how that wages comes about. But it, I think it's worth that we consider this, and we put something to the commission that we start moving forward on this and start moving forward on it for something to be done next year.
Well, Ken, I think right now our biggest constraint is simply a biological constraint, and you know, I think one of the questions for the group is how can we get to the point as quickly as possible given the resource that we're dealing with, that we have a full-time crab fishery, or as close to full-time as possible, if that's a goal of the committee. And it seems to me that, you know, you could have, incrementally at least, you could try to extend the fishery into December. I mean, right now we have a pod fishery that we're terminating in November 20th, November 21, but extend that into December and come as close as possible to fishing through the end of the year. But our, you know, given where we are right now, it sounds like there is concern about where we're going to end up at the end of this year relative to the reference points. And if we're over the targets and thresholds at the end of this year, the conversation we're going to have in the spring is going to be a difficult one, because then we're going to be confronted again with the prospect of having to tighten rather than liberalize, and that's not where we want to go. I mean, we want to get to a point that we can develop a vision for the fishery and implement it and execute it.
I think you had a question.
I have a
But Marshall,
I got a motion.
Go ahead.
We can find out how people feel. I have a motion to open crab dredging December 1st to January 30th, 30 bushel limit, 5 days a week. Sun up to sun down. That's my motion.
Is there a second to the motion?
We'll find out how people feel about crab dredging.
Second by Ty. I'll just ask, are you willing to offer anything to compensate for that additional mortality?
No.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion?
Jack can do that.
I think we've already talked about it, but what's the pleasure of the committee? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Can we have some discussion?
Ask for discussion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What do you want to say?
Well, I feel as though
that no matter what you do, it's going to get smacked down by the commission Tuesday anyway. So at least send something up there to them.
That's what I made the motion.
Well, I think if you want to put the commission or a committee in a position of providing advice that the commission can act on, it's going to have to be within the constraints of the mortality target. So if you're going to offer a motion to open crab dredging for 2 months, there'd have to be some sort of compensatory action that would probably close the pot fishery for 2 months or a month and a half or whatever the period is.
Can got somebody in can we?
Yeah, I'll take some public comment in a minute. Let me have the committee discussion first. Wayne?
I'd just like to say I think it's a numbers thing. I think when we get the crab population up more than what it is now, then we can introduce maybe a small crab dredge fishery. But right now, if we tried to open one up and we go out there and show a high mortality rate or that this thing isn't working, that it's killing more crabs than maybe we're catching, then maybe you'll never see dredging again.
Mr. Chairman.
It has its pros and its cons.
Oh, you know, I know Mr. Mullis has participated in numerous fishery management plans all over the East Coast. And it might be that he says something, if he addresses this committee, that we could go forward with a good motion to give to the commission. I just think it might be a good idea to.
And we're going to hear from him before we vote. Was there another comment, Ty?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. In 08, this fishery was closed because the crab fishery or the crab population was supposedly at dangerously low levels of disaster. And the disaster money compensated for the closing of this fishery. So the dredge fishermen ate the closure and accepted the disaster money work and worked for the last 3 years. Well, the disaster money's gone. These fishermen have to make a living to pay their bills. There's only not even half of a ghost potting season available with limited fuel reimbursement. You know, so for what Marshall has offered, if you're lucky to get 15 days a month to work, if you're lucky, that would give you at the max probably 30 days if you got that between January and December. And then you got 23 days of ghost pond. That's a winter's work for the men that can and or women that can go to work and need to work. And not only that, but the infrastructure, the picking houses, the people who need the crabs. And it's the commission's obligation by code to give each user group their fair share. Now, if you've got to take from one to give to the other, then by God, you got to do it. You might not take the whole months at a time from them, but you got to, if it means bushel limits put on them, bigger coal rings, whatever it may be, it's your obligation to put us to work. Now, when your disaster money's gone, our work is gone, it's time for us to go back to work. And that's, you know, that's the bottom line. It's in code that we are due our part of this fishery. And we've left it alone for 3 years because of disaster money. Well, now the disaster money's gone, and you can't keep us out of work. All right, thank you.
Indeed. Bill, come on up to the microphone, please.
Dragging on, but I want to say what I've got to say because that's what I came here for. And for y'all that don't know me, my name's Bill Mullis. I grew up on Gwynn's Island in Matthews, and all my ancestors are from Tangier. My grandmother's name was Miss Crockett, okay? I'm a Piney Point Merchant Marine Academy graduate. I was president of the Independent Fishermen's Association back in the early 90s during Amendment 4 development and the Sea Scallop Plan. I represented fishermen from North Carolina all the way to Maine. And you know our Sea Scallop Plan is one of the most successful management plans in the United States today. I appreciate the work that VIMS does, Rob, Jack, and everything y'all do. And I understand how difficult managing is from your positions in the chair. But You know, another thing I do, I work for seven different law firms. Today as a maritime liability expert, and I've written over 30 federal court case opinions, okay, some of them very valid. And so I understand how all this works, believe it or not, even though I'm just a waterman. You know, I'm just going to run through. I've been making points, but I'm going to tell you all right now, I have no doubt in my mind that I can take this presentation myself and go to court and win this battle for crab drudgers. And it may be necessary. I laid down for 3 years on a promise that we'd get a fair shake, but it's not going to happen. There's a political agenda hidden behind the curtain that's against crab drudging. We all know it. Let's be truthful here. Let's stop playing games. We know there's people that just don't like crab drudging, okay? But to me, it's just as much of a historical harvesting method as crab pots. It might be older. So I think there's some heritage here, and we need to preserve all the different types of harvesting methods in the state, just like Maryland does with the skipjack fleet, okay? I think it could be part of the state's tourism. But, you know, our state's behind the ball on some of their theoretical ideas. You know, there's no proof, you know, of this winter mortality. I never heard y'all talk about winter crab kill until recently. When you want to justify what happened to your numbers that you put in the newspaper, you'd saved all these crabs. When they went away, somebody had to say where to go. So it came out with winter crab kill. I started crabbing in Matthews County in 1975. And, you know, there's no proof of that. And I was very upset when they came out with the management plan and they cut out crab drudging, because when they called for a 34% reduction in effort in the crab fisheries, I've always asked everybody, who's smart enough in the room to explain to me how 34% equaled 100% in a certain segment of harvesting? There's no mathematician in the room that can prove those numbers and how that's just. I don't understand how you can take a fishery that your own statistics show historically was 10 or 12 or less percent of the total catch of crabs, and you think that's what saved the fishery. It's ludicrously ridiculous. It is. It's ridiculous. And I think there's no factual finding here to prove that, and that's what will win this in court. Judges rule on factual finding, not fiction. Even with the best science available, there's no factual finding here. And I agree with the science. I think it was discriminatory toward that method of harvesting. And, you know, it's just really strange what I've seen happen. I knew that when it was shut down for 3 years, I'd never see it open again. I knew that. But this is the end of 3 years, and I'm going to tell y'all right now, I'm not going to go away. The commission can vote this down next Tuesday, and I will challenge it in my methods. I don't know what I'll do, but I told you I work for seven law firms, and I will bring them in if I have to do it. Okay? So I think it's wrong. And in April, you know, we looked at a crab pot harvest that was bigger than the entire dredge fishery the last season it existed. And I'm not against crab potters either, okay? We live next door to them. We're all watermen. So, you know, the crab potters increased from 375 to 430. That's 55 new crab potters. So all you did is exchange people and harvesting methods. You've got 55 new crab potters and 40-some crab drudgers that aren't working. All you did is exchange rates of where it's being harvested and the mythology. I mean, look at your own numbers. It's simple. It's right here in front of my face. 69 dredgers the last season. Some of them only worked 4 or 5 weeks or 6 weeks. You know, y'all might not think I need to be in the crab drudge fishery, but it's my right. I crab drudged all my life. I drudge offshore, and it's who I am. And I deserve to be able to do what I've historically done. And there's people like Earl Kellum, Jackie Bonneville. These people crabbed all their life. Those people should have lifetime rights in this fishery. Y'all are going to have a different problem in 10 or 12 years. You're not even going to have watermen. If you'll check the age of your harvesting group, your whole management plan's out of whack. You really need, there's a new concept of how you could do this and have a good future in the bay. But I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, all was done with the crab drudge fleet. It was transferred to a different harvesting sector, which actually caught more crabs. Your own graph showed it tonight. And it discriminated against that. And then 7 years of overfishing, and the crab drudgers took the hit. Well, I looked at statistics tonight. The last time the crabs went up, crab dredge fishery was in full force. And due to attrition, the old deck boats falling apart and going away and rotting, and crab dredgers getting older and older, the crab dredge fleet's kind of gone down on its own, just a natural attrition. You know, you guys didn't put us from 200 to 60 crabbers the last year we all crabbed. That happened to natural attrition. You're going to see that same natural attrition set in on every type of harvesting in the Chesapeake Bay soon. A lot of the crab dredgers were old guys with old deck boats, and they're gone. They're gone, okay? You know, most of them are up in Kent County, Maryland, and they're converted into pleasure boats, a few that are left. But I agree with the survey work. I know Duran Ward. I worked at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science as a mate and a captain, both on research vessels. I understand the research. I'm very close friends with Jim Kirkley and Dr. DePaul both, and I do think we've got good crab science. I agree with it. I think the VIM survey is okay. Me and Ty met with the people on the boat, Rick. We looked at the mythologies used, and it's good science, and I agree. It's the best science available today. But all I've seen is really just a shift in how these crabs are being landed. And I know, like I said, I know there's people that don't like crab dredges, and they may think they're detrimental. They've got teeth in them, but so does all the oyster dredges I see hanging off every boom on every oyster grind in the state this past winter. There's no more habitat damage with a crab dredge than there is with this oyster dredge fleet that we've got going on. And, 46% the last few years, you know, so you hit your target harvesting segment. You know, you said we got 46% yield out of the fishery, but, you know, and then like I said, you skewed your own numbers and blaming it on winter crab kill. Well, my numbers tell me that winter crab kill that y'all put in the newspaper, and I've got the article not with me, was higher than the average amount of crabs landed by the dredge fleet. We've known about winter crab kill for years and years. The survey you're using about cut-up crabs is a survey that was done by a picking house, had a picking house behind it years and years ago because he couldn't control his crabbers, and he was tired of buying junk. So he wanted a survey to point that out. We're getting all this stuff cut up. With the basket markets we have today, you cannot sell bad crabs, and we don't catch bad crabs. And I'll tell you right now, you don't need to find any money for a survey. I've got a brand-new boat laying behind the house. I've got 2 8-foot dredges and a pullmaster winch for a crab dredge rig, and I'll put the fuel in her, and I'll take anybody, any day, all winter long for free, Rick, to show them they can look at the mortality. And you know it, Pete, you can catch crabs on clean bottom without cutting them up, too. You can. Take the divers out, set your blades ahead, and quit tearing them up. I've done it before. You can do it. Now, and I agree, there might be times that those crabs in that hard bottom, they'll get cut up. But that's when the fleet needs to know how to quit. And a lot of times those crabs get washed out of the bottom, and the bottom's so tight they can't get back in, and that's what causes your winter crab kill. But it never happens in December. Those crabs that died did not die in December, nor did they die in the first 2 weeks of January. And I can also prove that to you by putting surveyors or scientists on the boat and riding them around and making test tows in the bay. And I'm telling you what's right. This 25% damage, it's completely a ridiculous number. It's absolutely not true, and I'm willing to put the money up to prove it. I'll supply the boat, the dredges, the time, the fuel at zero cost to the commission, and you can ride on there, and I'll go anywhere you want in the state and pull those crab dredges, and you see if I tear 25% of them up. I know better. You know, you can fool some people, but you're not going to fool everybody. Y'all reference New England Fishery Management Council and the Mid-Atlantic Council in a lot of these management plans, and I think that's where we're going wrong, Rick, and I respect you as the chairman of Mid-Atlantic Council and understand what it is. But face it, we've got more closed bottom on Georgia's banks than you have in the entire Chesapeake Bay. It's two different ball games. You can't keep modeling Chesapeake Bay after federal waters. That ocean's big. We've got more scallop ground in Hudson Canyon and Elephant Trunk than you've got bottom in the entire Chesapeake Bay. You can't, it's an unequal mentality. You know, you can take these federal management plans, but when you apply them in a pond as small as Chesapeake Bay, with the user group as big as it is, they end up creating a bunch of part-time fisheries and part-time watermen, and that's what I've seen come out of it. Using federal management plans to manage a bay is wrong. A waterman should be a waterman that gets one card that says he's a bay waterman. He should be able to do every type of harvesting in the state. And I don't want to get off, you know, the disposition of this waiting list. Y'all are going to tell us we can't crab dredge, but you're going to allow more and more pots, and you don't have a tack for the fishery. You do have a tack, but is it enforced? I mean, come on. We know better than this. And there's no way y'all can save these crabs and boast these numbers in the newspaper and then lose those crabs and blame it on winter crab kill. If you call that responsible management, y'all need to think about your jobs behind your desk there. It's not responsible management, Rick. You and I both know that. It's a waste of a natural resource. It truly is. And y'all are charged with protecting the resource, and I believe in sustainable fisheries, but I also believe in sustaining fishermen as well with some balance. So, you know, and I'm, like I said, I'm not against a crab potter, but I really think y'all should look long and hard at this and create some maximum sustainable, you know, or some total allowable catches with this thing. And the ghost potting deal, it's ridiculous. You know, that could be challenged. And there's people that ghost potted that I never saw crab dredging in Chesapeake Bay in my life. And I thought that money was supposed to be for the crab dredgers. But it was for the most part. But there was a lot of people, and I will be willing to turn in the list, that ended up with ghost pot money that I never saw crab dredge a day in my life. And Ty knows it's true, too. There was quite a few people that ended up ghost potting. They were not crab dredgers. I don't know where they came from. And, you know, so there's been people added to the fishery, the waiting list. It's all unbelievable to me that y'all can sit here and actually shut down a harvesting sector and talk about winter crab kill, and you don't really, there's no way to control what goes in a crab pot, so you can't really have a, you can't really have a tack, Rick. I mean, it's uncontrollable, and without a tack, where are you heading? So I think you, I think y'all really should open the crab dredge fishery back up. We're willing to take more than a 34% reduction in effort, and face it, we really didn't work over 45 days a year to start with. We talked about that the other day in a meeting I was in with some watermen. If you take the 3 months and how many bad weather days we had and holidays in there, you know, you really didn't work that many days in that 3 or 4 month period. So I think we should open the crab dredge fishery back up. I don't know where y'all are going to take it from, because you don't have any way to control or limit crab potting. You can't control how many crabs are going to go in the pot. Right now, you can go up West Point and set a crab pot, and you get more than a bushel out of three, piled up, all you want. There's crabs everywhere, and we all know it. Now, I don't know, and I, you know, there's some inaccuracy in your science, but it's still the best science available, and I agree with it. But I really think that crab dredging has been discriminated against. There's no way you can tell me I can't crab dredge and keep adding people back to the crab pot list. And if y'all aren't going to open crab dredging, I'm going to advertise my crab dredge license, my crab pot license, in the newspaper and get an agent to fish it. Because it's just like the general category limited access fishery, Rick. You know, it's going to happen, so you just will be part of it if you're going to get shut out of it. And I'm probably the only person in the state of Virginia that was in that fishery heavy, and I ended up with 1.5% of the nation's entire quota. So I understand management, and I understand y'all's jobs, but I really think this crab dredge fishery was a cheap shot. It was a political agenda, and I'm tired of it being behind the curtain. Let's put it on the desk. Let's get honest with each other and really look at this thing face on. It's not what saved this fishery. How'd this go up and down all those years when the crab dredge fishery was still active? And now y'all want to claim that it's all about crab dredging? It's not all about crab dredging. A handful of people working 25 or 30 days, 40 people during the winter. That's not what changed your numbers crabbing. You know, I mean, it's really not. And, you know, I just think we all need to get real with each other. I know y'all have a political block to do anything with this crab dredge fishery. And personally, I don't think anything's going to reopen this fishery until we end up in court. I honestly believe that.
So
That's how I believe, and I am very sincere here. You know, I mean, I just don't understand how you can shut down one harvesting sector. If we said tonight, we're going to open up crab dredging, and you can get on a waiting list and get in, but we're cutting out crab potting, you wouldn't even be able to get out of this building. But the crab dredging was already on the way out. You know, open it with some limits. Put observers on the boat. I challenge the 25% cut-up crab rate or damaged crabs. It's absolutely not true. You cannot sell cut-up crabs in a basket market. We haven't for years and years. And the last people that could buy cut-up crabs were the local picking houses when they had big plastic barrels, and some of them boys would even throw rocks in there, wouldn't they, Mr. Graham? They're all gone. It doesn't exist anymore. What you all are talking about didn't even exist. And I'm willing to prove it. You know, you can do anything you want with the fishery. I've laid out 3 years. I went down the road the other day, and I looked at all the dredge rigs in Guinea laying in the woods. And you're right, Ty. If you reopen it, Rick, I don't think you'll have 35 or 40 boats. That part of the rigs are gone. Part of the boats are gone. The heisters are locked up. Some of the boys are doing pretty good oystering. You know, and they're going to say, well, am I going to spend all that money? I need a new chain. My chain's gone now. She's done been over there and rusted in one solid hunk for 3 or 4 years. So I think if you did open it to the participants that worked in that fishery the last several years, that you'd find out you'd only end up with about maybe 50, 55% of your fleet back in it. And then if you came in with a bushel limit and did put some observers on the boat and looked, checked out and seen how much damage we're really doing to the crabs, I think y'all would get a reality check there. I think the crabs, my number, damaged crabs, less than 5%. And I know because the last year I crab dredged, I counted them.
Bill, thank you for your comments and concerns. You know, I'll just point out that the dredge fishery was just one of many conservation measures we took 3 years ago to dramatically reduce fishing mortality. I think it's pretty clear that was the first time in a long time that the commission had been ahead of fishing mortality, and I think some combination of that and environmental conditions have worked in our favor to recover the population in the immediate years after that. But winter kill is measured annually, and you know, if it's something that we cannot control, obviously it's an environmental condition. But I appreciate your comments and concerns. I do think we need to have a long-term discussion about the structure of the fishery. We've already talked about that. I hope that you will support the committee when it works on those issues.
Absolutely. And like I say, you know, I just want the committee to continue to work toward this. And like I say, I mean, you can see in your own statistics, the crabs were harvested. They just weren't harvested by the dredge sector. So I don't see where y'all gained anything. Mathematically, it shows right there on your own chart. And I have no doubt in my mind, if this was challenged in court, that a federal judge would rule the fishery back open with a 34% reduction, and that's what it called for. And I agree, Rick, it has had some effect to bring crabs back by us not crab dredging. I agree with that. Any effort you stop has some effect.
That's just part of the conservation.
I understand.
I've got a motion in front of the committee. I need to move on. We have a motion in front of the committee. And there's a lot in the code. The code's been referenced tonight, and the commission, by its own standards, has to prevent overfishing. So we cannot fish at a higher rate than the target essentially that we're operating from.
I can understand
that's the position we're in as we go forward. I mean, we're being asked to open up a fishery that would add mortality. I'm going to go back to the maker of the motion. He had his hand up, Marshall.
My motion still stands. I was wondering when we're going to get to it.
Would discussion on the motion?
Would Marshall be willing to amend his motion to take the 34% reduction in, or did you have a bushel limit?
Thirty bushel limit.
Yeah, okay.
He accomplished that by shortening it 2 months and dropping to his bushel limit. Thank y'all very much.
Further discussion on the motion?
I'd like to maybe offer an amendment to it without going into great detail, but. You know, rather than try to go out and get a number that you think is, you know, agreeable for watermen, let's take the short road and try to take the money that's going to be allocated for the ghost pot and the shortage of revenue from your loss of days this year, compensate that with days of work. or bushel limits, however you want to do it. In other words, if you've been given 51 days, it goes pop for 3 years, and you're only going to get 27, we need to figure out how we can get you 20 some odd more days on the water working. I think that's going to be a whole lot more palatable with this group here tonight. If you're going to ask for anything, you better be reasonable with what you're asking. I wouldn't shoot for the moon because I don't think you're going to get it. I'm going to vote yeah for your motion, but I don't think you're going to get it. I think if you're more reasonable and approach it with the aspect that, hey, we got 47 guys that's been proven that are hardcore men, and they're the last of the full-time crabbers. And we've been talking about infrastructure falling apart, talking about the public perception. That same perception has been there for 100 years. That's the same public perception that doesn't like sponge crabs. That's the same public perception that thinks that only the sponge crabs are the pregnant females. They don't know any different. You know, they don't have any skin in the game. So I don't pay any time or mention to the public perception. Fact of the matter is the infrastructure is falling apart. Fact of the matter is all picking houses will never open in the wintertime ever again because the labor force isn't there to be open in the wintertime. It's strictly going to be a spring, summer, fall production situation. But from the Commonwealth of Virginia standpoint, we've got a resource out there that we've been able to take for 100 years and sell that resource and profiteer from that resource. Why do we want to give that up? And if the picking house comes back and for whatever reason we need to pick crabs in the wintertime, it's not going to be big volumes because the labor's not there, at least we have the option to do it. And at least that full-time waterman can continue his livelihood and not have to sell his rig and take a land job because he has no more winter income for 4 months out of the year, a quarter of the year gone. You know, so my attitude is, because there's no ghost pod money, let's get whatever money is left in the ghost pod program and make up the difference with an allocation of days, be it 20 days, 15 bushels, whatever it is, and pacify those guys one more year until we can really have a better understanding of where we're going with these charts and graphs and numbers and get on with our livelihoods. You know, if it's the best science available, it's the best science available. Do I agree with it? You know, I've agreed for 20 years with all the measures we've done, but it seems like we've been given. We've talked about outlining what we're going to do 20 years from now. It's going to be a give and take. We got to outline how the industry wants to look. Well, the industry is suffering right now. The watermen are suffering right now. There needs to be some more give and take here. We've been given. It's time to take a little bit back. That's my attitude. And I'm not asking for the moon. I'm just asking for a little bit. And I'm not going to benefit. Graham Rollins is not going to benefit. My watermen, who are my livelihood, as my pickers are my livelihood, I am wanting to protect those people and those livelihoods. That's what's important to me. Not making more money by selling cut crabs. That's my attitude.
Johnny, is that your amendment?
So, Marshall, that would be my amendment to your motion, is to get whatever you're going to be shorted that you've been able to get for 3 years back in the form of days of work.
27 days.
John, are you proposing any compensation for that elsewhere in the fishery to account for the mortality?
No, that's where I'm talking about the give and the take. I don't think what we're asking for is going to drop that graph to the bottom. You go back to that graph, there hasn't been three consecutive years in the 20 years that graph's been shown where we've been, you know, within a threshold where we should be. There's only been two.
Is there a second to the amendment?
I would second the amendment, and I have a question. I'd like the 27 days we're talking about. Are these 27 calendar days or are these 27 working days?
Without any compensation for mortality. The motion is to add
for mortality.
Right. The motion to amend is to allow 27 working days of dredging. Is that correct?
To those that were eligible when the fishery was closed.
Yeah.
To those who were eligible when the fishery was closed. Is that correct?
Yep. Okay. 47 people, and we're guesstimating maybe 30 might jump into it.
Further discussion on the motion.
So I made my motion. In a second, now you've amended it. 27 days. Is that correct?
It's been amended. Right. We're going to vote on it.
And vote on it.
This 27 days from the beginning of the season to the end of the season? Or is that 27 days from the beginning of December to the end of January?
That would come from staff recommendation. Whatever they think would be the best time frame. Not to go in there on the worst possible time to tear up bottles.
Marshall's motion was
My motion was December 1st, January 30th. How long is this period, Tom?
To January 30th?
Yeah, pick 27 days. December 1st to January 30th. That was my original motion.
This would be just
whatever
starting
staff
December
deemed
1.
The best is my amendment.
Within the season.
Get them all in December, you quit. It takes 3 months to get them in, 27 days.
Get 23 goose pot and 27 drudging with a 30 bushel limit. Am I,
Mr. Chairman?
My amendment for giving up mortality is the bigger coal ring in the bay.
That's what I wanted to know. Where are we going to make this up? Do we have to make it up in this motion?
Well, the commission's going to have to make it up.
Yeah.
By presumably closing the pot fishery for a period of time. I mean, I don't.
Would we have
you know,
to close the pot
year.
Fishery, or could you do it through
the coal ring?
Other options, either a lower bushel limit for a period of time in the spring, or
the mortality is going to occur this year. It's going to start December 1. So you'd have to compensate for it in this calendar year. That's the problem.
The season goes into next year, so why would you have to compensate for it all in this year?
That's a good point.
Well, it's the crabs.
The mortality is done by
it's the crabs that potentially would be harvested next spring.
Well, the only part that is true is when they do the removal rate, that's going to be based on the 2011 harvest. And it's going to be based on the abundance that came out of the 2010-2011 Baywide Winter Dredge Survey. So it would be on the December would be the cutoff for that. It would be on that year, 2011. As far as what else there is to look at, I think one of the things I tried to show you was that we do have the coal ring, we do have the peeler size limit, we have the sanctuary, we have the dredge fishery closure, we have the pot season closing on November 21. So that's what's available now. Anything else would be for us to start to figure that out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one thing. ROM has, VIMS has done a study on the 2 7/16 coal ring, so he ought to be able to give numbers on what that would save to the commission next week, if that's needed. He should have it.
ROM is here still. There's ROM. ROM is here. Talk to ROM. We are going to get together and look at that. If ROM wants to give a brief bit of information on that, that's fine. But from what I understand, it's going to have to be figured out on what you're saving versus what you're losing, too. So, for example, once we get into that 2 7/16-inch coal ring, the history of coal ring exploration started in 1987. It was a bumpy road. It took another turn in 1993 with the 2 3/16 and the 2 5/16 coal ring. And there were plenty of protests about loss of legal crabs.
Yes.
And that's going to be a situation with the 2 7/16 open at certain times and then closed other times. But all those are issues. Those are, God is in the details there. But if Ron wants to say anything about the coal ring, we haven't really sat down and looked through it yet.
Well, I think the other issue is it's too late in the year, probably, from a practical standpoint, to implement a coal ring change. To really get the full benefit of the application of that from a management standpoint. I mean, you might consider a coal ring change for the following year. Right. And we can have that discussion this fall and in advance of the next season. The concern I have is that, if the committee is saying that they want to see the crab dredge fishery as part of the future of the blue crab fishery in Virginia, I think that is an appropriate long-term message to send to the commission. I think if we as a committee simply say we want to open the dredge fishery immediately without any compensation for mortality, then
when I say formal mortality, I just mean to, for the trade-off directly, then the commission would be in a position where it couldn't act on the advice because it would be over the expected target. And that would put us out of compliance with the code. So I think that's a difficulty we face tonight. If you want to send the commission a message by passing this vote, what's the committee's prerogative, but that's the problem. Ken?
What code are you talking about?
The code that includes the standards for Virginia's fishery management plans. It says we're supposed to achieve optimum yield and prevent overfishing. Pretty straightforward.
What about number four?
User groups. That's the user group issue has been considered, but I think the issue in front of us is that we have reference points that include maximum sustainable yield and targets we're managing to. That's the difficulty. I mean, the committee can make whatever motions it wants. I'm just telling you, if you don't compensate for it, I think if you want to include advice.
I certainly feel as though 27 days out of 53 people is not going to destroy this fishery.
We didn't meet on mark.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that I would agree it's not going to destroy the fishery, but we are managing based on targets, and it's very likely to put us over the target then without changing. The other thing I see, if we do try to do something along those lines, we don't, with this public hearing request that was made last month, we don't have any way to make changes this month in other components of the fishery to account for that additional mortality.
Mr. Chairman.
Ken.
After the first year, when we went and counted numbers about what Virginia gave up, what Maryland gave up, Maryland came far short of the 38% or 34% they were supposed to have given up. And then they went back and somehow or another, through magical record keeping or something else, they came back where they complied. Just a point I'm making that I wonder about it all myself.
I would agree that Virginia shouldered the burden.
Mr. Chairman.
Marshall.
Long time between now and December 1st, and everybody keeps talking about giving something up. I wonder if there's any way that we could have staff or Jack or somebody look into things and see what possibly could be done so this can work. But I know we vote on this and we pass it and send it to commission on Tuesday, he's going to stand up and say staff doesn't support this. It's deader than George Washington. I already know that. I've been here too long. I know this.
We all know.
We're
that.
Just wasting our time. So maybe we need to work around this some kind of way so we can get George Washington there to help us some.
But I think
it's a
reasonable compromise that's put on the table right now.
Marshall, I guess I would agree that if you don't have an offset in place and we haven't advertised an offset that would be considered, it puts us in a difficult position.
Yeah, I mainly made this motion just to see how these people felt sitting at this table. I'm tired of talking about it over and over and over. Right. I want to see how you feel about it. You know, vote on the damn thing, see what people think.
Let's vote.
Is the committee ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Eight, opposed, like sign. Two, motion carries. Thank you.
I'm sorry, that was the amendment, right.
The amended motion is now the main motion. All those in favor of the motion as amended, please raise your hand.
I thought that's what we...
No, we just voted on the amendment.
27.
We voted to amend. The motion, oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. The motion, that was a motion to amend. The motion to amend is now the main motion. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Eight, opposed, like sign. Two, motion carries. Is there any additional business to come before the committee?
Not damn time.
Seeing none, we're adjourned.
Wait, whoa. Yes.
Go ahead.
That's an important issue. Yes.
Can you brief us briefly, because it's 10:15. Thank you.
I got a long run.
ASMFC has been concerned about the status of the Menhaden stock for a couple of years. It's like blue crabs. There's a new stock assessment on Menhaden. It shows that overfishing was occurring in 2008. very slightly, but nonetheless occurring. The people who did the stock assessment, in looking at the reference points, the targets and thresholds that you're now aware of, expressed concern that they were the ones that are existing were inappropriate for the fishery and recommended some new higher reference points. The ASMFC has now advertised or is getting ready to advertise a change to the management plan to incorporate those new reference points. The effect of those reference points is such that harvest of menhaden along the entire Atlantic coast could be cut somewhere between 23% and 45%. Now, we're not just talking about the reduction fishery. We're also talking about the bait fishery. If the bait fishery is cut by 23 to 45%, the price of bait is going to go up, and that's going to affect the blue crab fishery, the lobster pot fishery,
big time.
Recreational fishermen who use menhaden as bait, you know, who knows what other fisheries, but it's something you need to be aware of. The document, the amendment to the plan to do this has not been printed yet. It'll probably be out next week. I'll be glad to share copies of it with the committee. There will be public hearings in all the states on this, probably in September, late September, early October. There'll be one here in this room, I'm sure. But you need to be aware that, you know, this is being proposed and it could have an effect on the blue crab fishery. Ultimately, I don't know where ASMFC is going to go with this, but that's what they've agreed to put out for public comment.
Well, it'll shut the crab fishery down.
Jack, you said there'll be a meeting here in September.
Yeah, public ASMFC will have a public hearing here.
Tell us all, send us the email.
We will make sure that everybody on the committee gets
a yeah, and we can tell everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Seeing none, we're adjourned. Thank you all very much for coming out tonight.
Next meeting.
You know, you go back up in the river, and that between the yacht club, you know, it opens up. You got any spots up that far?
Jamie used to stay in there. We used to work out of, keep her boat in Middle Mill Creek.
Oh, okay.
Out there at the American Legion boat. Crab and trout off. Then we got about two or three different crabs.
Right up here.
And now the damn
place. We ran a situation last year. We were going to have to fill a meeting.
Yeah, we started crabbing in there.
Oh, news. I don't want you driving all the way over here. We end up having something happen in the winter.
It's too damn much. Up there, yeah, I moved the place back up in the river there. Tommy Leggett grew up in the neighborhood where we live. He said, I went across the Broad Creek Bridge. He said, I've never seen so many crabs.
Yeah.